that rocks.
Now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Hi, Jolene.
Peter, hello.
The world turned upside down.
Crazy. I mean, crazier than ever.
Wow. And just think, just a few weeks ago, everybody was saying, wow, nobody's doing anything about what's going on. And suddenly, worldwide, occupy every damn city in the country.
In the world.
And the world, yeah. In fact, remember last week we said that there were Occupy demonstrations and occupations on every continent in the world except for Antarctica. And they actually flew that woman off out of Antarctica that had that stroke. Did you hear about that? She had a stroke and she was stuck down there. They couldn't get a plane down there to take her out. And finally, so I'm thinking, come on, you know, you're there.
Get it started.
Occupy Antarctica. Yeah. We'd like to hear from you. Any of you who were down at this demonstration that Jolene and I went to Friday at downtown Detroit, marched from the Spirit of Detroit to Grand Circus Park. And I'll tell you, I lost track a little, only because I didn't keep track of what's going on in Grand Circus Park, where there is Occupy Detroit, where there are people pitched tents and are staying there. So if there's any of you listening that are down there, or any of you have been down there and give a report, please give us a call at 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And if you're just tuning in, this is a talk show. So we want your participation, what you think of all this, because it occurs to me that no matter how many people are involved, the majority of people are observing it. And one of the things that we, meaning Jolene and I, have done for so many years is to try to give you what we think is the straight scoop on what's going on as opposed to what the corporate media tells, because it's almost always wrong.
Well, a lot of the time is. It depends on which outlet you're watching.
Wait a minute. A lot of the time.
Like Fox News. Well, I mean, you know, there is some straight-up news that is fact.
Well, speaking of news, the Detroit News, which has like a 150-year history of being on the wrong side of history, of denouncing every popular and progressive movement that's ever come down the line from the labor movements of the 1880s and the 1930s. They beat the drum for every single war that ever has happened. Mm-hmm. They denounced anybody who would dare to challenge authority as being less than patriotic. During the McCarthy communist scare of the 1950s, when the House Un-American Activities Committee would come to Detroit, and then they would subpoena people. In other words, it was exposing them publicly as being communists.
Right.
The Detroit News would put their names and home addresses on the front page of their paper. Yeah, this paper was so terrible, horrible, repellent.
Yeah.
And suddenly, the Detroit News, and I haven't been reading the Free Press very much, but Detroit News seems like it's part of the communications network of Occupy Detroit.
Yeah, well, do you really think that? Because, well, there's still that one character.
Oh,
there that
God.
Ruins
we're not
everybody.
Talking about that creature from the Black Lagoon, Nolan Finley. That guy is so. It doesn't even matter. All these. Who even knows?
He's the angry guy.
The angry guy, yeah. But for instance, on Saturday, my wife and I were thinking, well, let's go back to downtown Detroit, Occupy Detroit, and see what's going on, because oftentimes what will happen, as you know, and most people know now, there'll be marches going to a financial institution or something like that, like they've done in New York with Occupy Wall Street. So I, some reason or other, looked online at Detroit News, and they're announcing that there's an Occupy Detroit a little meeting, a public demonstration at Oak Park High in Oak Park, Michigan.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I just emailed all of my friends, and she and I went over. There wasn't a huge group, but you know, people were out there with signs and everything. And it was just a cacophony of horns honking in support.
There were a lot of horns at the one on Friday night.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of people.
I mean, if you think, and this is what occurred to me, that people, liberals and progressives and leftists, were so upset about people like, now this is going to sound like a name from the past. Sarah Palin. Remember her?
That's the best news ever.
Talk about yesterday's newspaper.
Although, you know, I kind of miss laughing at her.
Yeah, she is. But we can have more fun than that. By the way, the world turned upside down. It was an old English folk song, a march, really, that goes back to the 17th century. And these radical groups, one called the Diggers, were that protested against the enclosure of public land. And what they did is they occupied what should have been public land.
Oh, okay.
Of course, just like happens now, the force, the armed force of the state comes and
says, shoo flies, shoo.
Yeah, you are out of
there. Hey, wasn't Times Square was taken over?
Oh, my God,
this is
one
of the latest ones. And it was, like you said to me, and I then looked at the images, it really was like New Year's Eve in Times Square. Truly amazing.
Thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah.
My sister and my niece were just happened to be there, and like with a lot of people.
Oh, well, here we go. Yeah. Perfect timing.
Now, one of the things, there are so many, and again, this is not bragging, but there are so many incredibly interesting things on my website. All, and why I say I'm not bragging, is I simply copy and paste.
Yeah.
So I'm not creative, I'm not eloquent, at least, you know, or anything like that on my website. But it's Peter Werbe, werbe.com. And it's organized in something like a jumble. So
yeah,
you got to work with
it. Who's severely disturbed by your website. I go, you need to get over it. It's just about information.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I found out, you never looked, I don't think, but I did, that in Mozilla, there's this jumble.
Right.
There's this jumble in the left column
a jumble.
Maybe that's metaphoric. I don't know. But on Explorer, you can see it just fine. But there's all you can find, the Occupy Detroit Facebook page link, 10 ways to support the Occupy movement, I don't even know, whatever else, rallies across the globe.
Send them a pizza if you can't go. You know how that's been happening all over the world?
Send it, not me.
No, to anyone who wants to support them and can't go down there, a lot of people will call the local pizza place that's nearby, and they'll deliver. This is happening. It happened, started, and it maybe has done it, you know, with protests throughout history. I don't know. I mean, in pizza history anyway. But in Madison, they were doing it big time, and this place was just hopping business. New York, they're doing it. You can do it here.
There is so much food being delivered to
Grand Circus Park, or to all these protests.
Well, particularly to Occupy Wall Street.
Wall Street, yeah. I know. They're eating well.
They're actually a little overloaded.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Well,
so, I'm just looking at
this.
An incredible show tonight at 1 a.m. I'm going to be running an interview I did with the great American actor Danny Glover. Remember him from Sergeant Murtaugh Lethal Weapon.
Oh, see, you know,
he's not his best there.
I don't like those movies, but sorry, guys. I know you guys dig those, man. But
well, he was in.
I don't know. I was married to someone who watched that a little too much, so I've got a bad taste in it. But I love him, and he's an incredible activist as well. Incredible.
Yeah.
And he came to Detroit. He's come to Detroit
very frequently.
A few times.
Yeah. He
tell everyone what he does here.
Well, I tell you, but maybe this would more endear him to you cinematically.
Okay.
He was in The Shaggy Dog.
Oh, my God. That old Disney film?
I guess it was.
Wow.
He was, I mean, you go to Danny Glover, and the number of films he was in, and the range of stuff from such total, he was in Saw.
Wow, you know, all over the place.
And he's in these incredible films. And
well,
then he's
he was in
these,
The Color Purple.
Yeah, he was the mean husband, right?
He was really good at being the mean husband.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Tell him what? What'd you say? Tell him something?
Oh, yeah. Well, when he comes to town, what he...
He's supportive of all these projects, particularly urban projects that are trying to organize people that are at the depths of poverty. And when you're in the depth of poverty, that's when you are the least organized. You're just facing degradation on every level as a solitary individual. So there's a number of projects that are here in the city that are trying to move to organize people.
That
Danny Glover is very, very, that he supports, very, very. Actually met him. There's a project just south of West Graham Boulevard and the Lodge called the Hush House. And Charles and Sandra Simmons run that. And I think he's retired, but he was a prof, a communications prof at Eastern Michigan University. And he moved back into just this absolutely destroyed neighborhood.
Wow.
To start using the skills that he's developed over the years in communication to link people together. And they've done, urban gardening.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
More of that. We need more of that.
Here in the wealthiest nation in the world, in a neighborhood like this, sometimes as many as half the people in the neighborhood have had their utilities cut off.
Terrible.
So it also has one of the highest grossing McDonald's in the area. Because
you get the dollar menu. You can make it. A long way on that menu.
And very frequently, and I'm not sure why, but poor people often, they don't have a lot of the skills that have been lost, I guess, of cooking nutritious meals and what have you that wind up to be cheaper.
That's true. And maybe some of these people don't have vehicles, don't have a grocery store nearby, because we know in those neighborhoods, what are you going to have? Party stores, liquor stores, et cetera.
Occupy Detroit, your thoughts, please. People nationwide, 56% of the people support that. That means 44% don't. That's support the Occupy movement.
Oh, that's all. But then, what was that other?
No, you got that one. Wait, hold on to that.
Seven in ten. That
okay.
one. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll hold on.
We'll hold on, okay.
Anyway, sorry to say that one of these Republican reptiles acting out the script for the ultra-rich, Eric Cantor, Republican majority whip from Virginia, he compared the Occupy Wall Street movement to angry mobs. And, I should go back to my website. What else did he say? He was the one, I think I quoted last week, that he said that the Occupy movement has turned American against American. And I said, yeah, that's true. They have. They've turned 99% against 1%.
Those are some pretty large stats. I mean, that is the new code, code phrase.
And
but it's so true.
I said to a friend, I said, more, it should be like 80, the top 80%. Let me see if I can say this. The level that makes you get into the 1% is like $325,000.
Yes.
In other words, 99% of the people make less than $325,000 here.
And
I mean, that's a lot of money. Yeah, yeah. So Eric Cantor said that he's increasingly concerned about the growing mobs occupying Wall Street and the other cities across the country. I wrote on my website, let's increase their concern.
Yes, yeah. Bring it. Making the repugs crazy, this
but
stuff.
Can we give people credit where credit is due? 313-298-WRIF. Any comments at all? If you've were part of the march here in Detroit that now has people occupying Grand Circus Park.
Phone calls coming in, by the way, and I think people are fired up about this.
If you were observing it on television, whatever. But here, get this. How many politicians, I guess they always flip-flop, don't they?
Is this a light bulb joke?
No. A top Republican in Washington, this is Cantor, altered his stance on protesters involved in Occupy Wall Street just 1 week after comparing the movement to angry mobs. Eric Cantor, he's not the whip, he's the Republican majority leader in the House of Representatives. That's what am I thinking? He said he told guess who? Guess what news outlet he was talking about?
Faux news,
right? That Republicans agreed. I can't believe this. There was too much income disparity in the country, and he says most important than my use of the word mobs is there is a growing frustration out there across the country, and it is warranted.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So you even have guys like Eric Cantor.
That's amazing. And someone wrote on our Facebook page. Ray wrote, Eric Cantor's starting to get nervous. Good.
Well, what is interesting? I mean, there was this small movement financed by the billionaire Koch brothers that brought the Teabagger Party, the Tea Party, into being, the Teabaggers, as they first called themselves.
And full steam ahead, that's how it happened.
And by the way, do you remember them? Remember the teabaggers?
Yeah. Oh, Peter, they'll be back.
Yeah, no, they're not going to be back there because they've totally run out. See, one of the things is that they never were really rebellious, and everything they wanted has just been folded into traditional Republican, mm-hmm. conservative, you know, ultra-rich, favoring policy. So they're all but gone.
Hey, how about down at Occupy Detroit, the Ron Paul guy? Peter was so funny. Peter was doing some interviews.
Video interviews.
Video interviews. I'd like to get those.
A friend of mine was doing the camera.
And I'm sure he's going to put together something fancy. That would be cool if we could get some of that for our Facebook page. But Peter, I saw him going, and I thought, he's agitating. Here he goes.
I wasn't.
But the guy actually looked at you and listened to you. He wasn't one of these, you know, with total blinders on, even though mostly he was, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, 313-298-WRIF. And if you want to email us, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. This is Night Call. I'm Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan with me, of course. And Facebook friends always want it. Facebook.com/Night Call. We'll have podcasts tomorrow at noon. Thank you, Sarah. Sarah, also grab your phone call at 313-298-9743.
And that's always good for people who say they need to go to bed, but they can't keep their eyes open any longer. It's late. It's a work day tomorrow. It's something you can do tomorrow night to listen to the rest of the show.
Now, you know, I only want to focus on this because this is the negative. Because mainly what we've been doing for so long is not accentuating the positive in this Occupy movement that's sweeping the world, because there wasn't much of a movement to combat wealth, combat the teabaggers and all that. Suddenly, everything is open, and you realize that everything that these Republicans, these conservatives, these teabaggers said that they were the people was just a bunch of nonsense. Because, as you started to say, right?
Oh, yeah. This was an ABC News report that 7 in 10 see Wall Street negatively. Basically, yeah. That's the premise of it, this short article. Unfavorable impression of the financial institutions on Wall Street, point of resonance with the protesters camped out in Lower Manhattan and elsewhere.
And it says the sentiment is broadly shared, but groups such as Democrat and liberals expressed the most negative views of Wall Street in this poll. Conservatives and Republicans, guess what, are less apt to slam
and
the brokers
and
the
bankers.
And more. And, you know, so this is the Stockholm
syndrome.
That's what it's called. Right. So you identify with your kidnapper. Right.
Right, exactly.
And, of course, these people have zero contempt. They have complete contempt and zero compassion for the people that are the most heavily affected by what's happened over the last 30 years, really. I mean, it was bad enough with Reaganomics that just the middle class and below had stagnant incomes and all the new wealth just went to the high side. But now people are hurting so badly. And you might say, well, I'm not hurting badly. I just bought a new car, got a new house or something like that. So,
and we'll never say never, and I don't wish that upon anyone,
yeah.
But we're all... this could happen to anyone,
but,
except
you know,
for the 1%.
Sometimes I will look at the comments on underneath articles.
Uh-huh, and, online.
Online, and I'm thinking, man, these are some really, really mean people.
Mean, awful.
I mean, they're talking about, I don't know if I can weed out some of these comments of people, why they were taking part in all of this.
After the poor,
yeah.
And women and
they're
children.
Losers. And you're talking about people that have lost
job,
their...
You know, if you were, you know, you dirty hippies.
Yeah. And one of the things, and they focus on a lot on young people. And, hey, you know, young people.
What?
Love them.
Yeah, me too.
They're doing it.
Well, they're kind of the.
But there's
the
people of all ages.
They're the spice at of these rallies, you know? And they're the ones who are hanging out down there.
Yep. Listen, we have James from New Hudson, Ron from Heartland, Rich calling in from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania,
hey.
Josh from Richmond. Hang on just a little bit. I just want to say one more thing, and then we'll get to your calls. And that is, this was, you know, I've been instead of looking at the front page of the New York Times every day, I look at the business section. And here, this article, in private, Wall Street bankers dismiss protesters as unsophisticated.
Yeah.
Just think.
What do they know about finance? What the hell does that mean?
Well, I mean, well, here, publicly, bankers say they understand the anger at Wall Street, but believe they are misunderstood by protesters camped on their doorstep. You know what, guys? They absolutely understand you and what's going on. But even so, when they speak privately, it's often a different story. According to this article, said one top hedge fund manager. We all know what that is, right?
This is the best part.
Yeah.
Right?
Most people, and he's probably from his rich
little circle,
view it as a ragtag group looking for sex, drug, and rock and roll. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
My God.
But he says, it's not a middle-class uprising, said another veteran bank executive. It's fringe group. It's people who have the time to do this. You know why they have the time to do it? Because they don't have a job.
Because they can't get one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And you see all of that.
There's always a small percentage of people who don't want a job. But most people who I know, including the ragtag people who like sex and drugs and rock and roll, they can't get a job.
Well, you know, one of the constants in this, and maybe some of you can speak to this, give us a call, 313-298-WRIF. Increasingly, you see students there that are talking about, I'm leaving college. I'm going to owe $35,000. Yeah. I have no prospect for a job.
I eat ramen. I saw one of those.
They eat ramen.
Ramen noodles, yeah.
Yeah, like the 75 cent noodle.
Oh, you can get like 10 for a dollar or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this is the ragtag group looking for sex, drugs, and rock and roll. The wealthy hold the rest of us in such utter contempt that you can't believe it. Not all of them.
Definitely.
You know, some of them have heart. Some of them are philanthropists. Some of them take part in liberal and progressive causes. But the real core of them, the Koch brothers, those folks, they think they should run everything. And they don't miss a beat when everything that they've planned, all their strategies and tactics and all that, bring the country to the point, in fact, the world economy to the brink of ruin. They don't even take a second breath.
They don't even blink an eye.
Apparently, the average student loan debt is $27,000. You know, and of course, this is
$50 a month that most of them are paying too.
That's the phenomena, though, of the rich loaning money to the working class and the middle class high rates, right?
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, starting off, if this ain't $27,000, what's that? I had this unusual occurrence, which I will not relate. I don't even know. I don't think Jalene knows this.
What?
When I graduated, when I left college, I never graduated college. When I left college, I won a lawsuit for $5,000.
You did?
Yeah. That started me off. In fact, I had just gotten married, too. I got married when I was 23 years old.
I know.
And so my wife and I started off with a nest egg of $5,000.
Yeah.
I mean, that's absolutely amazing.
Well, because that was a little while ago.
It wasn't back in the 20s or anything like that, but it was back a ways when that was a little bit more. Now, to leave college, and rather than having assets, you have debts of that magnitude. So one of the things that ought to be called for is they have a jubilee. That is to say that debts are forgiven and that all these student loans ought to be forgiven. You say, whoa, what was that going to do to the bank? Well, for one thing, I just think they ought to eat it and give their stockholders less return on their investment.
Let's foreclose on the banks.
Or the other way to do it, too, is take it from where it should be taken from. And the people on the left would agree with this, and people like Ron Paul on the right would do. You slash the military budget at least in half.
Yes.
You bring all the troops home from all these overseas bases. You dismantle the Africa Command, the South American Command, the European Command. Stop giving money to all these militaries overseas. And guess what? Everybody could have free university education. And I would like to see, in fact, maybe even this grow, to be a major subset of what is going on there, is that college students say, forgive the debt. What's your number one demand? Forgive the what do they call it? The
student loan
debt. Forgive the student loan debt. Your thoughts? Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF. Let's take our first call. Here's James in New Hudson. Hey, James, you're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good.
Good. Hi, James.
We're pumped, but, you know.
Yeah. It's actually been a couple of years since I've called, but, you know, I can go on and on. And
well, we do, but we...
Welcome back.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
I remember radio.
Hey, James, are you with us? Are you with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
No, I can't.
You got to talk into that.
Yeah. That...
I'm way out in New Hudson, so, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Rage Against the Machine, man, they're talking about all this stuff back in the day in their music, but that's
sure.
Side
totally.
But, yeah. Hello?
Yeah, we're with you.
Yeah.
Okay,
we're waiting for you.
So this is a kind of a lighter note. You know, and I don't see much coverage of the Detroit protests on national news. There's been a lot of local news and stuff. And if you remember the guy that posted on Dave Bing's website or at Facebook about wanting to put a statue up of RoboCop in front of the train station.
Oh, yeah.
And then he said, no way. And then they raised the money, right?
Right.
I was watching, you know, one of those, like Tosh.0 or whatever, something like that. And there's a Comic-Con and I seen RoboCop. He looked just like RoboCop, a guy in a costume, you know, like he probably paid like $5,000 for this costume.
Wow.
And, I think it would be great. And, I don't know how serious you'd take this, but, you know, post on your website, try to raise some money, you know, to bring that guy down to our protest, you know, so he's there. You know, and it'll get national news that RoboCop is there at the Detroit protest.
Well, I think one of the reasons that the Detroit Occupy Detroit and Grand Circus Park that's going on as we talk, people are camping out there, is because it hasn't really grown to any substantial extent.
For it to be of concern to the authorities.
It's just the beginning. You know, they planned for 4 weeks in advance before they did New York. And so I'm sure things are going to start happening. And the other things, you know, the New York, the NYPD, I can't believe people actually wear T-shirts and hats that say NYPD.
I know.
On them. They are cops gone wild, particularly the white-shirted commanders. They are,
one that ran the guy over with his motorcycle.
He was actually a blue shirt. All right, James, we'll consider that.
Okay,
RoboCop. But not long. This motorcycle cop just yesterday ran over the leg of a legal observer.
Now the legal observer's being arrested.
It was arrested, yeah. And then this white shirt just punched this guy in the face out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It was walking away, and the guy just turned around and smashed him in the face. And the guy actually got away, and it turns out the guy was HIV positive, and he said, I hope the commander gets an AIDS test.
Well, that's not cool either, though.
No.
Not
here's Ron in Heartland. Hey, Ron. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good. Hi, Ron.
I got a real quick question for everybody, and it's a heartfelt question. Why should the banks loan people money that aren't going to pay it back to save Detroit?
What are you talking about? I'm not quite sure what you mean. In other words, you mean banks aren't loaning money to anybody.
I know. Why? They got all this bailout money. How come they're not loaning it, giving it away? They're giving it to the Chinese in interest. Why don't they give it to us Americans?
But I thought you didn't want them to.
No. He was just asking, why don't they? Well, because it's good business. It means that they can get extraordinary profits. It means that that the CEOs can get these huge amount of reimbursement. Not reimbursement.
Oh, bonuses.
Bonuses.
Those things are outrageous.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the sense it makes. Does it hurt the community? I mean, one of the things that when we see, for some reason, things shock us more than others. I don't know why. Highland Park, the lights have been turned off. This is the richest country in the world. So you got to remember.
We're talking about the streetlights.
Yeah, the city streetlights have been repossessed by DTE because officials failed to pay a multi-million-dollar utility bill. And guess what? It gives rise to concerns about safety and crime in darkened neighborhoods. I used to live in Highland Park, and with the streetlights on, it was kind of a tough way to go. DTE Energy crews have removed about 1,400 light poles from Highland Park.
There was a $4 million in unpaid bills, and this is how they're getting out of it.
Any one of these billionaires could take it out of his front pocket and just say, here. All right, Ron, thank you very much. Here is Rich. He's calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Rich, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Pete, how you doing?
We're good.
Good. Hey, yeah, I was just wanted to call in. I was wanted to, I guess, second what you're saying. I mean, I think this whole thing is really exciting. I have been active in a whole lot of things for many a year, actually in Detroit for a long time. That's how I know about your show.
Oh,
okay, good.
And I used to be rich from Ann Arbor back in the day.
right on.
But yeah, I just wanted to, I guess, kind of give you a what's going on in Pittsburgh.
Cause sure.
Like this is a big thing, you know, across the nation.
Yeah, I haven't heard about Pittsburgh. This is good. What's up?
Yeah, we had they started planning meetings about maybe 4 weeks ago. The first planning meeting for our Occupy Pittsburgh, I was at the meeting. 400 people showed up.
Wow.
It was amazing. I could not believe it. This is for a planning meeting.
Yeah, that is amazing.
let me interrupt
you. We have like 1,000.
Yeah, Rich, I didn't want to one-up you, but if you go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com, you can read an account of our planning meeting that had 1,000 people at it. We were at a local church just up the road from the old ballpark, the old Tiger Stadium, or what was. And we had so many people that in this huge church, we had to take it outside. So there was like 1,000 people at the planning meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Fabulous.
I mean, it's amazing how many people want to be involved in this. And then I know we had a rally and a march on Saturday, as many cities did. Maybe I would say, if I had to guess, I'd say about 3,500 people. It was definitely a good size march. Yep. We wound our way through the city. There's a number of big financial institutions in Pittsburgh, like Mellon, PNC, and UPMC, which is like a big medical, like they basically
sure.
run the city. And so like we stopped at those different places, had a like kind of mini rallies right in front of those places. And then everyone ended up at Market Square, which is right in front of Pittsburgh Plate and Glass, which is another, you know, old school, like an old school capitalist. You know,
famous.
Place, you know, from the old days. Yeah, you know. And, it was great. I mean, like people were, it was very exciting. People were out in force. They had a big, like, public microphone. So, people could, you know, get up and talk and speak. And, they had some local, artists that would, like, have, music and things like that. And then afterwards, I think they had a permit till 4 o'clock. So then people went to, it's a place called Mellon Plaza, which is where the campsite is. And it's right at the foot of UPMC. I call it the Dark Tower, but it's the UPMC building, which is the old U.S. Steel building. So there's like a historical significance there.
Wow,
you know,
yes.
And right now there's like I'm not there as we speak, but as of a little bit earlier today, there's about 150 campers.
Well, that's great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, I got to, speaking of corporations, I got to do some commercials. Hey, Rich, thanks for checking in from Pittsburgh,
yes,
PA.
Yes, thank you.
Don't forget the Motor City.
Okay.
All right, man. Thank you very much. All right.
Yeah, clearly he hasn't. That's great.
Let's see who we got coming. Josh in Richmond, Michael in Inkster, Dennis in Windsor, Ontario, making our show international.
And you.
And Tristan from Dearborn. And you can call us at 313. Well, wait a minute. Don't we pay some guy?
We do.
But I'm going to tell you this when we come back, what Jalene and I are going to be wearing for Halloween.
Ooh.
What costume?
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe and Jalene Jordan on 101. WRIF. Peter and Jalene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Trojan Man.
Attention, pleasure seekers. Trojan Bearskin Condoms are bringing couples closer than ever before. At an amazing 40% thinner than our standard condoms, just listen to what this couple has to say.
The irresistible
closeness and
amazing
sensitivity
allow us
to feel
more
connected
than ever
before.
It's
like we
become one.
Wow, can't get much closer than that.
Get irresistibly closer with Trojan Bearskin Condoms. Triple tested quality from Trojan, America's number one most trusted condom brand.
Can't wait to get it on.
Right now, homes are more affordable than they've been in decades. And Quicken Loans has a mortgage program that will help you buy that perfect home. Call Quicken Loans right now. They can even introduce you to a local real estate agent that can guide you through the process step by step. With more than 25 years of helping American homeowners, Quicken Loans makes the process as easy as possible. With a streamlined approach and proactive updates, they provide you with the certainty you need to search for the home of your dreams. And highly trained Quicken Loans specialists are standing by, ready to help you take advantage of this incredible mortgage opportunity. So give Quicken Loans a call now. Call 888-249-1425. Find out how much home you can afford. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425.
Jeez, Kim.
It's hot as in here. What's going on?
Oh, it's only 91 degrees.
Where? In the refrigerator?
Ouch! The countertop is so hot you can fry eggs on it. And bacon and home fries. Are you on that sweat diet?
No.
I'm melting my life away.
Hey, by not running my air conditioner, I'm saving energy and helping the environment.
Uh-huh. There's an easier way to help the environment. Go green. Go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you don't have to sweat it, if you know what I mean. So you got any eggs?
No.
How about shrimp? We can fry shrimp. Do you have any shrimp?
No. I have anchovies.
Mm-mm, no.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to our second segment. Remember, 1 a.m., the American actor Danny Glover talking about a brand-new film he co-produced, and it fits right in. It's a thing of the 60s. All they just found these tapes of all these Black Power activists. It's,
oh, okay.
Called Black Power Mixtape 1967 and 1975. It just seemed like kind of a piece of interesting history when I first heard about it.
Yeah.
Suddenly, you know, they're and I saw the film, and, you know, what's that, what's that sound that's going down? You know,
oh,
what's,
yeah.
For what it's worth, yeah.
Yeah.
1,000 people
Buffalo
in the street.
Springfield.
Indeed. So
email?
Okay. Go ahead.
Steve wrote in from Farmington Hills and said, protesting Wall Street and the big banks is a nice sentiment, but the bankers are laughing at the protesters. That's okay. We don't care.
They are.
And they have good reason. Most of the protesters, as well the rest of America, will continue to keep their money in big banks, true, despite all the fees and ruinous practices of Wall Street. If the Wall Street protesters really wanted to hurt the bankers, they'd transfer their money out of the big banks and place it in a credit union. True.
Well, guess what?
What?
I'm sorry, what was the person's name?
Steve.
Steve. Good idea, Steve. And I'm not sure, I should have had this on my side. There is a transfer money day coming up. I think it may be something like November 17th, where they're asking everybody to take their money out of Bank of America, out of Citibank, out of PNC, and put it in local credit unions.
Okay.
A lot of times, though, you know, a lot of the local credit unions then deposit their money with Citibank, Bank of America,
see,
and whatever.
And you need to find out before you do it, right?
All right.
Anyway, it says money talks and BS walks.
Yeah. All right. So we're talking about the Occupy Detroit. We're talking about Occupy Wall Street. We're talking about Occupy Everywhere.
Times Square.
To get a handle on what's happening to the common people of the world, and that's about 99% of us, right? Or at least 90% of us. And we're being ripped. We're being looted. And that's, in fact, that's the main thing. We're being ripped off. We're being looted. They, you know, the rich are definitely getting richer. The middle class, the working class, and the poor are getting poor. One of the things I floated for students is a jubilee, as they call it, a forgiving all student loan debt. Average student coming out of college, $27,000 owed to wealthy stockholders in banks. And where do you get the money? Take it from the so-called defense budget, which is actually a war budget. All right, Josh and Michael and Dennis and now Tristan and Lance, we're going to get to you, but I said that we would tell you what we are going to wear on Halloween.
Yeah, what
can
are,
you
what
guess?
Are, what are we wearing?
A V for Vendetta mask.
Oh, yes.
Now, you're saying V for Vendetta mask. Probably a lot of you know what that is. That
movie.
Is actually a mask of Guy Fawkes. Guy Fawkes on, I can't remember the year, but he had a plot. He had the gunpowder plot. He was going to blow up Parliament. And he has said in English, kind of English saying, and they say the Guy Fawkes is the only person ever to enter the House of Parliament with honest intentions.
Oh, wow.
And John Lennon has a song, The Fifth of November. You ever hear that one? He's screaming, actually. I don't know. I can't remember what the rest of the song is about. But he says, and that's Guy Fawkes Day, and it's celebrated every year. Anyway, the person V in this film is, that V is a symbol, this revolutionary symbol of this mask, this Guy Fawkes mask. It's got, kind of looks like, oh, I don't know. It's got a thin mustache and looks like somebody from the 17th century. And here it says, V wears the Guy Fawkes mask for almost the entire film and uses Fawkes' story as a role model in his quest to end the Norse Fire Rule, a fictional fascist political party ruling the United Kingdom in the original comic book series. And the guy's name was Alan Moore. Was that who wrote it? This was because V felt Guy Fawkes was right in trying to bring down what he felt was an oppressive government during his day. Now, these masks, which are seen everywhere. There's been over 100,000 sold per year, and they are skyrocketing. We might not even be able to find one. Now, here is something. Oh, and the best line of the film in there is V says, people should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people. Mm. And I would say that in 98% of the cases, including this one, we are afraid of our government, and in very, very few cases are the governments afraid of the people the way they should be. The idea that these people actually work for us is long gone.
Yeah. But does anyone even remember that?
In London, where there was this enormous Occupied London demonstration yesterday, Julian Assange, who is the guy that did the WikiLeaks, that spilled the beans on all the U.S. machinations around the world about U.S. foreign policy, he was there with a V mask, a Guy Fawkes mask, actually. And he was told by the police he had to remove it. Now, it's in many U.S. cities, maybe even in states, it is illegal to go masked in public.
It is?
Yeah, well, usually they say it's for nefarious purposes. I mean, if you see a lot of these, a lot of time these kids in what they call the black block that start breaking windows and stuff like they did in Rome, bad idea, bad tactic. There's we've got the momentum. No need to do that.
Yeah.
But they're masked. But the other thing, it's also an anti-Klan law. That is to say, the Ku Klux Klan would go mask when, you know, here, one of the major U.S. terrorist, native terrorist organizations, the Klan. All right, let's continue on. Thank you for holding on, all you guys. Where are the gals? Ain't here.
Yes,
but you can get
ladies.
In. 313-298-WRIF. It's Josh in Richmond. Hi, Josh, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
We're great.
Good.
What's up?
Nothing. So you guys talking about masks and whatnot, and about costumes, you know.
Yeah.
I will be Frankenstein for Halloween. So
cool.
I'm excited, you know.
Yeah, well.
Very exciting.
So, is that it?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead. We're
no.
Time's a flying here.
But V for Vendetta, that's a great movie, you know, I mean.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey.
What about Occupy Detroit?
Occupy Detroit, I mean, you know.
Out there in Richmond.
Yeah, I'm all the way out here. I'm out there.
How about Occupy Richmond?
Yeah, why don't you
get it started?
You know, if you go to my website, peterwerby.com, there's actually 10 steps to help the occupation. One of them, start your own occupation. So think about it, Josh. I appreciate it. Hey, WRIF's own Screamin' Scott is calling from Las Vegas. And,
is he really?
And wants a shout-out. You want us to shout-out to you?
I love it. Shouting out to you, Screamin' Scott. They've been there for the Sin City Takeover all weekend.
Oh, yeah. Screamin' Scott, one of the legendary DJs of WRIF.
He'll be back tomorrow. We did a live broadcast today, interviewed lots of bands, and I'm sure a lot of you heard it.
Yeah.
Very cool stuff.
Yeah. All right.
We love you, Scott. And Scott, by the way, and we can say this because Scott would be happy for us to say this, he is down with the program here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Scott, if you're listening, call in. I think they're doing Occupy Las Vegas. All right,
He is.
Yeah, maybe he's part of it. Let's go to Dennis in Windsor. Dennis, thanks for making our program international. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you guys tonight?
We're good. Thanks for calling in.
Great.
Good. No, thanks for having me.
No, thanks for calling.
No, really?
No.
just tuned in a few minutes ago when we were talking about the Jubilee and having the big banks eat the cost for the military eat the cost for student loans. But I'm 20. I went into debt for college, didn't finish, and tried opening my own business, went into a little bit more debt for that. But why don't we just take care of ourselves? And why do people think that somebody else should take care of us when it's something that we've decided to purchase?
Like what's that? I mean like the university tuition?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Well,
about all these countries around the world that it's free university tuition? What's wrong with that? I mean, when our military budget is out of completely out of control.
And we're
cut
paying.
Back on that, and let's take care of our people and educate our country.
Yeah, it's our money. This is, we're funding the military-industrial complex. And the reason, for instance, in Canada, where you have a national health care program, the reason it's not as good as it should be is because Harper is buying all these planes and wants to build all these ships and all that.
Canada, for crying out loud.
Yeah, you don't need anything. Man, you ought to disband your army. You don't need an army.
Now,
Let me ask you this.
I love Canada.
Wouldn't you rather, honestly, wouldn't you rather see your tax dollars, instead of funding wars, especially illegal wars and the deaths of, you know, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people, wouldn't you rather have that money go to pay for your college education than that?
Wait a minute. Do you have to pay in Canada for college education?
Yes, we absolutely do. It is quite a bit more affordable than the U.S. colleges and universities, but we do pay for it. And I agree with you that the military, both in Canada and the United States, are a little bit overdone, especially for us since you're our neighbors, so we really don't have anything to worry about. But personally, I would just rather take care of myself because I find whenever the government gets involved with anything, it just gets more screwed up.
Well, you know, it's not exactly true. In fact, wouldn't you say the opposite is true? Right now, I mean, there's so many poor people. Maybe you may or may not know about the United States, but the United States has the highest number of poor people of any industrialized country. It has to do with a minimum wage that's absolutely incredible. But it mostly has to do with...
Incredibly low.
Incredibly low, yeah. That mostly it has to do with the way money is ultimately dispersed within, the different groups of people. So what you're talking about is that people literally do not have the capacity to care for themselves. It's not like if you're going to take money away from these mothers and these children that somehow the mothers go, well, damn, I can't get the money from the state of Michigan anymore. I guess I'm going to go out and get a job. You know, there's not any jobs. You know, that's the problem. All right. Thank you, Dennis. Appreciate your call. Here is Tristan calling in from Dearborn, and thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air.
Peter Jeline, how y'all doing tonight?
We're good. Excellent. What's up?
First, sorry I couldn't join you guys at the Occupy Detroit Friday. I had something come up. I know you guys asked me to be there, and I apologize.
Well, you don't. Hey.
Forgiven.
Yeah. You know? Occupy Detroit means never having to say you're sorry.
Yes, something like that.
Oh, yeah. It's more in the aspect for you guys because I feel like I kind of let you down.
No, you didn't.
No worries.
A couple things real quick. The email that you got from Steve on moving your money out of the big banks and into credit unions.
Yeah. Right.
Solely agree with him. I have never had my money in a big bank and will never have my money in a big bank. I actually have it in the local credit union down here, and I have never had a problem with them.
Oh, that's good.
How are they with fees compared to the big banks? Amazingly better?
Are they charging you $5 for a debit card the way Bank of America does? Because here they can't rip us off anymore with these bounce check fees and I forgot what else. There's some kind of transfer fees. So they say, we got to
find some way.
We got to get another $60 a year out of people. Yeah.
Personally, I don't know how they are on their fees. I've never really paid attention to them, but I know their fees are not as killer as what it is in a big bank. But the other thing I wanted to touch on, I believe his name was Eric Cantor.
Sure, he's the majority leader of the Republicans.
Okay.
Yeah, in the House of Representatives.
You know what? He does have every right to be worried because we're the ones that put him in that cushy, expletive little job of his, and we're the ones that can take him out of it.
Absolutely. Hey, I got to get Screaming Scott. It's ready to get on the air. Thank you, Tristan. And from Lost Wages, here is Screaming Scott. Screaming, what's up?
99%, baby!
That's 99%. That's the call. That's the button. I got a button that says 99. Oh, we got to talk about my button. I got a button that's got 99. How you doing?
I'm doing great. This is where all the money's at because they've definitely got all mine.
Oh, no, Scott. No. You've been there for, what, 3-4 days?
Yes, I am hit.
Hey, we heard you had an extraordinarily good time last night.
Oh, big time. But the staff's telling me when I've had a few pops that I walk like Ozzy, which was hilarious. But Peter, to point out to you, there is an Occupy Las Vegas.
All right.
And you can reach them on Facebook. It's just that you type in Occupy Vegas, and their Facebook page pops up. And it's tied in with all the others all around the country. But I've seen a few signs from people out here just randomly out there with the 99%, and they have T-shirts and more. So it's fun on the West Coast.
Great.
It is.
Good to hear. It's everywhere.
It's on the West Coast of everywhere.
Exactly.
All right, well, you'll be back on the air tomorrow night?
No, actually, I've got the pleasure of having a night off. Because I'm
going to
need it.
Yes, he needs a vacation from his vacation.
This is the Arthur Pennello syndrome here. All right, man. We'll look for you when you get back to the station.
All right, take care, guys.
Okay.
Stay out of
Michigan.
All right, and stay out of all those places of ill repute, and I mean all of them.
Too late for that, Peter.
Uh-oh. Okay.
It was vacation.
Yeah. All right.
And what stays there?
Thank you, Scott, one of our great DJs.
I have an email real quick.
Okay.
And says, I don't know if you know this, but we were talking about the V for Vendetta mask. Says that mask also has another use. It's used worldwide by the malicious internet hacking group called Anonymous, which is why it may be illegal.
Oh, that's right.
Cody.
Anonymous is one of the groups that have hacked into any number of banks and what have you. And if you go to my website, I'm keep pounding this, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, you can go down there, and some of these statements from Anonymous are really incredible, and they're made by somebody with a voice distorter and the V for Vendetta mask.
Oh, yeah.
The Guy Fawkes mask.
By the way, there was a Mike Kitchen, buddy of ours.
Sure. Hi, Mike.
Posted something on Facebook that down at the protest downtown at Occupy Detroit, they need, if anyone wants to donate, they need tables, vegetables, tents, cleaning supplies, tarps, sleeping bags, blankets, books, and ice with an exclamation point.
Wow.
So if you feel generous.
Is this is on our Facebook page?
This was on mine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
our Facebook page is facebook.com/nightcall. And come on, be one of our friends. We'd love to have you. All right, we'll be to Sean and Lance and Shauna in just a minute. Here's Michael from Inkster. Michael, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm working as a security guard out here in Inkster, and we're listening to your radio station. We've never heard your radio station before. First-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
And we never even heard about Occupy Detroit because we work nights. A lot of the time we work 13, 14 hours straight.
Oh,
wow.
So we never even heard about this, and we wanted to know what it's all about.
Well, for one thing, it probably would be easier.
Are you on Facebook?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yes, I am.
So just search Occupy Detroit, and you will find more than one group on there. And they're down at Grand Circus Park in downtown Detroit, which is about 5 blocks north of the end of Woodward. Right off of Woodward, and people are camped out there, and you go down, you don't have to camp, but, you know, if you want to stop by during the day.
And one of the things that it's really all about is what, you know, is the differences, what they call disparity of income between the ultra wealthy who, the small percentage of people, you know, what, Screamin' Scott was just talking about, 99%. The 1%, I forgot, I hear figures all over.
$350,000 or more.
Well,
income,
no, I meant,
right?
They control like 40% of the wealth, and they control all the major wealth. And in the last 30 years, as I said earlier, literally the wealthy have gotten wealthier and wealthier and wealthier at the expense of the middle class and the working class and the poor. I won't even ask you what you make, but I suspect in the positions like yours, it's not a handsome salary. And one of the things that the way you end that disparity is making a much higher minimum wage. Like the minimum wage at a minimum, if you will, ought to be about $12 or $13 an hour. And you say, well, wait a minute, that's going to price people. I mean, that's nonsense. The wealthy in this country are making way, way too much money, and they're doing it at the expense of people whose lives are then made not as rich in the sense of, not wealth, but in the sense of always having to worry where the next meal is going to come from, whether you can fix your car, whether you can get your kids' dental care, whether you yourself have health care. things like that. This isn't anything in a wealthy country, in a wealthy world, the way people should have to live. And the reason it is because the 1% control everything to the detriment of, well, I don't know, the 99%, but at least the 80% that are making 50 grand below. I don't know. Does that give you any idea?
Yeah, it does. I'm from Southwest Detroit. I'm from poverty, so I know all about that.
And it all started with a Wall Street occupation, yeah, which is still going on. And now it's what's happened spilled out to other cities around the country, many cities. And yesterday it was happening everywhere around the world.
And let me ask you, Michael, I know a lot of people that live in the Southwest side, and they like it. And it's a working class community and also a poor community. And usually people take those kind of social configurations. That is, that's the way things are. There is poor people. That's where the poorer people live. Why in the wealthiest country in the world, and this is, I'm not asking you so much, I'm asking it in sort of in general, why should there be poor people at all? I mean, particularly when you have guys running around, I just hear in front of me, I mean, everybody from Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and the Koch brothers that have billions and billions and billions of dollars. You know, these brothers that between them have like $43 billion. That's the budget of some little countries. If they could give everybody on the Southwest side $50,000, and you know what? They would still be multi-billionaires.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have health care, per se, for myself.
Right.
That's because I work two jobs. And I barely make enough to support me and my girlfriend, and I have a son on the way.
That's ridiculous. So that is absolutely ridiculous.
And you work two part-time jobs with no benefits?
No, I work two full-time jobs with no benefits.
Yeah. Ooh. That's outrageous. That is what you just said, Michael. That is what the Occupy movement is all about.
Right.
Draw to the attention of people what sort of poverty we have in this country, how people are doing without what should be the right to live a life that is free from the kind of worry that that I can read between the lines in what you say without that kind of worry. And that when you have a child, that the school you go to isn't packed with 45 kids that many of
her
didn't eat, per class. It didn't even have a good breakfast, but rather should have the best school in the world. And that when your son or daughter grows up, that they ought to be able to go to a free university, and that they shouldn't have to suffer the kind of pollution that these rich billionaires want to enforce on us. They want to roll back environmental standards. Hey, if you get a break, check it out. I looked at the time, Michael, and I've got to do some more, get some more stuff on the air. But thank you for listening. Call us again.
You guys have a good night.
All right. You guys too. Yeah, we got to get
every Sunday night, 11 o'clock.
Yeah. So we got Sean and Lance and Shauna coming right up. That means we got some open lines. And here's Mr. Announcer. Oh, yeah. One of the things I wanted to tell you when we come back, there's a proposal in Florida for a new kind of execution.
Oh, this is unreal.
Yeah.
Sick.
And can you, I'll give you two guesses. What political party? The proposal came from. All right, right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Are you ready to update your flooring? Well, don't miss the Lowe's Floor event going on now through October 31st. Come in today and get free Stainmaster carpet installation with the purchase of any Stainmaster carpet and pad. Or check out tile and laminate flooring for only 68 cents per square foot. For these and more great values, check out the Lowe's Floor event now through October 31st. Lowe's, never stop improving. Offers valid through 10/31. Some restrictions apply. See store for details.
Do you own a car you no longer want, and you don't have the time or energy to sell it? Donate your car to Heritage for the Blind. Your donation is tax deductible, and your car will be towed away for free. Call 1-800-943-1356. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, trucks, vans, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. Call now. Your donation will help those in need. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call now to donate your car, and as a special thank you, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-943-1356. Donating is easy, it's tax deductible, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher by donating. Call 1-800-943-1356. 1-800-943-1356.
Monthly payment calculation assumes 5% down at 7% APR over 30 years.
You know what happens to a beautiful 4-bedroom, 2-story house when the owners default on their loan? Some private bank becomes the new owner. And when a mansion in the hills is confiscated due to unpaid taxes, the government takes possession. But the government, the private banks, they're not in the real estate business, so they want to unload these houses as fast as they can, sometimes selling them for substantially below market value. Imagine finding a great 3-bedroom, 1-bath home for $19,000. That's just $120 a month. To learn how to get a free list of foreclosures, call now, 1-800-339-1890. CRN is offering a home rebate of up to $1,000 in cash, and you can find out how to get up to an extra $2,500 on top of that. Call in the next 30 minutes to learn how to get a free list of foreclosures that may be in your area. 1-800-339-1890. 1-800-339-1890.
Yes. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to our second hour. Pleasure to be with you. Jalene and I will be here for another hour, taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF. Your emails at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and hit us on Facebook, facebook.com/nightcall. In 12 hours, Sarah will have our podcast available. And, hey, call up, then listen, you can hear yourself.
Yeah, if that's your trip.
Pauline writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Peter and Jalene, when dropping off a few supplies today, now when she's talking about Occupy Detroit, there is an encampment in downtown Detroit in Grand Circus Park, just, what is it, down the street from the Fox and what have you?
Yeah. That would be up the street, wouldn't
it? No, down.
Okay.
Downtown from the Fox.
Yeah.
Okay. When dropping off a few supplies today at the encampment, I took down a list of what is still needed. Whiteboards. Oh, yeah, that's sort of instead of blackboards. Whiteboards, tables, gloves, storage tubs, tents, tarps, sleeping bags, blankets, books, ice. This sounds like the other person. Did you read this? Ice coolers, fresh vegetables, food, and, of course, monetary donations are always welcome. Did you read
that's
it?
A different one.
That's a different one. Yeah, so other people. By the way, Peter, it was nice to see you at the church Monday. I went there for prayer services.
But Peter, no. Stop it.
No.
This was where
the planning meeting for Occupy Detroit took place. Can't remember the name of the church. It was on the corner of Trumbull and Grand River.
Is that the Spirit of Hope?
Spirit of Hope Church. Yeah, there's a great urban garden there run by an old friend of mine. And so there was 1,000 people at the planning meeting to the point where the church was too small. We had to go outside.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Well, here, we told you that while the whole world is exuberant about facing the what is crimping our lives, what in many cases is destroying our lives, the Republicans are checking some other issues out. How about this? Saying that stop letting convicted killers get off that easy. A Florida state lawmaker wants to use firing squads or the electric chair for those on death row.
He is this guy's a sweetie pie.
Yeah, yeah, because they say it's too nice just to be
just to shoot him up with a lethal injection.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
He actually has introduced a bill, Republican Representative Brad Drake, that he wants to give them a death sentence that would choose between electrocution or a firing squad.
Nice.
Drake, a Republican, said the idea came to him after having a conversation with a constituent at a Waffle House. Howard Simon is the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union in Florida. He used to be head of the American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan. He said Drake's legislation would cause further embarrassment for Florida if it were adopted. Simon said, just when you thought that public policy in Florida couldn't get worse, along comes a state rep who develops proposed legislation from what he overhears at the Waffle House.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. So we're talking about Occupy Detroit, and I thought Michael from Inkster had an interesting question. He said, what's it all about? So your observations, we still haven't talked to anybody. A couple of people have written in, said they brought supplies down to Grand Circus Park where the encampment was. And Jolene
is,
thank you. And that will be the locus of activity. So just like Occupy Wall Street began fanning out from the lower part of Manhattan. So things will happen there. So the best thing, if you're on Facebook, is to just, what'd you say, just go...
Occupy Detroit. Search Occupy Detroit, yeah. You'll find it.
And on my website, too, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And as well, let's see, there's really some incredible stuff there. Yeah, you can see what's happening all over the world. A whole thing about the mask that so many of these people are wearing, the V for Vendetta mask, and someone just told Sarah, just saw the V for Vendetta mask at the Halloween City this past week, and believe it, they are going to go fast because they, in many ways, are the symbol of it all. So I'm trying to see
I need to finally see this movie, Peter.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty good. Oh, yeah. There's the Occupy Detroit Facebook, an account of the planning meeting where there are 1,000 people. If you're looking at my website on Mozilla, there's just this jumble of words on the left side. So if you look in Explorer, you'll get it. 10 ways to support the Occupy movement is good. A whole thing about the origins of the V for Vendetta mask. And New York cops, NYPD, cops gone wild again, man. But, you know, there for all the brutality that the police in New York City have done to the demonstrators, they're actually, the police around the country are getting, in a, I hate to say, getting better.
You know what? When we were there Friday, they were...
Oh, the Detroit police
were wonderful.
Cruel beyond belief.
They were so cool.
Did I say cool?
Cool.
Cool, yeah. In New York, they're cruel. Yeah.
And you know I love my Michigan State Police.
Yeah.
You know how I love them. In fact, they just drove by.
And here, why I'm saying they're getting better, here's the historical precedent. 1932, we're in the midst of another depression, the war in Europe had ended, 14 years previously. So that wasn't any big deal. That would be like, 1997 to us. Thousands of veterans came to Washington, D.C. and made, guess what, an encampment. They occupied Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And they had this huge encampment, and they were called bonus marchers. And they wanted to, Congress to give them a bonus for their service in World War One. I mean, they were poverty-stricken. Mm-hmm. They'd been gassed.
And that was a serious encampment. I saw a documentary about it.
Really? So what did the government do under Herbert Hoover? They called out the Army, and they had a few familiar names. General Patton General Eisenhower wasn't a general then, and General MacArthur, soon to be generals. And what did they do? Did they just kind of push them around with their billy clubs the way they do in New York? No. They brought in cavalry, burned the encampment to the to the ground, all sorts of injuries. And you can see there's a link to that on my site. I mean, it's disgraceful little part of American history, and some of the better known, military men in American history, in recent American history, were involved in, shamefully. Here's Shauna in St. Clair Shores. Shauna, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, this is my first time ever calling in, but
welcome.
I had to call on this.
Yeah.
It makes me sick. It makes me sick to my stomach.
What's that?
The big banks, you know, the government can bail them out.
Good, you scared me for a minute.
No. The government can bail out the banks, but I have my father, who in the late 80s had a wall crush his back.
Oh.
And he wasn't sure if he was ever going to walk again, but he had 3 kids to feed, and he did. And he worked, you know, his butt off, and he's in his early 50s. He can no longer work. His spine is torn up, and it's been over a year that we've been fighting with Social Security to even try to get him anything, and it still isn't even going.
I never understood
that,
people,
Social Security, well, we don't have money right now, we don't have funds, we don't have this and that, but they can bail out banks. You know,
it takes forever with those disability.
Whole life. Yeah. You pay into it, but you can't get it when you need it.
You know, Sean, I don't know if you've ever seen those ads on television, and you get an idea of widespread your family situation is, because you got lawyers that do nothing else other than handle that kind of law. They say, denied by Social Security, call so-and-so, you know?
Right, and it's just sickening. You know, I have three young girls myself, and I would do anything for them, and it's just disgusting right now how the government is.
You know,
it really is.
We had a caller, Dennis, from Windsor a little while ago, and in Canada, I can't remember what it is, but every child gets a stipend for the government, you know, gets a monthly little fee. They want to make sure that the children of their nation, of our nation, rather, of their nation, of the Canadian nation, doesn't go without, that has proper nutrition, that can get the clothes they need, to get the medical care they need. In fact.
Well, yeah, and then the education. They're cutting education left and right in our state. How are these kids supposed to learn? How are they supposed to be educated?
Shauna,
how are they supposed to lead our country?
Shauna, don't tell me you don't want your kids to be one of 60 in a class. How about it should be one of 15? Wouldn't that make a lot of sense?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it would. And, you know, and government doesn't care. They care about, you know, how much bigger their pockets get. They don't care. And they don't understand the middle class and the poor are the ones working to make them rich.
Well, we never had a voice before, and the poor never had a voice before. The working class had a little voice, and usually the middle class, a lot of the middle class people thought, oh, everything's cool, you know, I'm doing okay. And suddenly this Occupy movement that's going throughout the world has become the voice, has identified who's benefiting and who's suffering.
Yeah, you look at Fannie Mae right now. They're taking people's homes left and right, and people are blind and oblivious to that fact. They're saying they'll remodify people's homes. And after 3-4 months, they say, okay, we're not going to do your modification. We're going to bump it up twice of what you were paying before. And, of course, people can't pay that right now.
Terrible.
And then they're taking their homes and putting them into foreclosure.
No.
You know, and people just... I'm glad people are now finally starting to do stuff. And I completely agree with taking money out of the big banks and going to smaller credit unions. Take the money away from the banks. What do they have?
Well, thank you.
Get
yeah, go ahead.
Bailout?
Well, Shauna, for the first time, you did better than good.
Great job.
All right, call us again, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, thank
Please
you very
do.
Much.
Don't be shy.
One of the things that's got to happen, or this movement, this Occupy movement, will just go away. It is like an upsurge of outrage. In Spain, it was called the indignados. In other words, the indignant ones. The indignant ones. And many of you probably never even heard of it. There was like hundreds of thousands of people all over Spain protesting against the Spanish government's austerity. And what that, you know what that means, right? It means the bank screwed everything up. Somebody's got to pay for it. So it can either be one of two groups. It can be the ultra-rich, or it can be the average people. So they pretty clear where they came.
Like Greece.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's take some more calls. Sean from Clinton Township, thanks for being so patient. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Sean. How's it going?
Good. Hey, thanks for calling.
Well, I'm just like the last caller, Mike from Inkster. I'm working a security night full-time on the weekends and a part-time job during the week, no benefits. It's really not fun out here. But
no.
I had a couple of interesting points about these protests in New York. How do you think this would affect the New Year's party on Times Square?
I don't know. You know what? I'll tell you. I want to see what happens. I mean, most of the occupiers all over the country, when people say, what are you going to do when the snow starts flying? They say, we'll be here. Well, that's pretty tough. I mean, you've been probably through enough Michigan winters to know that.
Brutal.
I was visiting a friend down there. Yeah, I could understand. Definitely in the winter there, it's pretty bad. There's no public restrooms anywhere. It's pretty crowded.
Where is that? Down at the
Manhattan.
Oh, Manhattan. You were well here in Detroit at the Occupy Detroit at Grand Circus Park. They actually have porta johns, you know.
And yeah, unfortunately they didn't show up until the night after, but they got them.
Yeah, and I forgot what they did. They did. Oh yeah, somebody welcomed them in. We should give those people props. But the church, Central Methodist Church.
Oh yes.
That is, this is right at the corner. The northeast corner. Right.
That's where I always park.
Yeah, and Central Methodist. It's actually
Central United Methodist.
Central United Methodist has this incredible history of progressive
Martin Luther King, or was that a different
Martin Luther King preached there? Yeah, sure. It's absolutely incredible. Well, here's what I'm interested in, Sean. Where is this Occupy movement going to go? Well, I mean, because what I mean by that, and I'm not even critical, I'm not saying any criticisms, but it has to formulate demands and policy. Every important social movement of in this country, beginning the Revolutionary War and through the abolitionist movement and the suffragette movement and the anti-war movements and the union movements, they all had very specific goals. Now, when you look at the signs of people, you see, you know, forgive student debt or tax the rich or any number of very important, you know, things about the environment, all very, very important. But unless it gets translated into a very specific demand, I could imagine this could dissipate, but we'll see. All right, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan at your service. Here's Jason in Royal Oak. Jason, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Jalene.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Hey, Jason, can you cut your radio all the way off, please?
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't know I had a radio on.
I thought I heard it in the background. Isn't that us?
It must be coming in through
the... Okay, go ahead then. Go ahead.
Basically, I just wanted to say that promote the idea of putting a small tax on Wall Street transactions and make them responsible for bailing themselves out, and what you thought about that, and basically leave it at that.
Well, did you want to... Okay. Yeah, no, sure. Well, I don't know. Leave it at that. I mean, there's any number of things we could do. One, we should take the cap off of payroll tax. So right now it ends at about $103,000. So these guys that are making $11 million, $20 million a year, they never pay any more than on $103,000. And the transaction tax. Oh, I see. Jason wanted me to. He hung up.
Oh, he's listening.
Yeah, he's listening. The transaction tax means that for every transaction that occurs on Wall Street, and I think isn't there like something like a billion a day or some insane number because it's all done by these machines now.
Right.
By computers. That would be like a penny or a half penny, and it would generate billions and billions of dollars. I mean, this is this enormous crap game that there's not even real wealth. It's all in just cyber wealth, and there's nothing even substantial there. And
it's like air.
I want to talk about Herman Cain. This is now, this guy has risen to the top of the Republican heap. I don't know
nominees.
If we should bother, but I want to get a lot of
nine,
you on.
Nine,
Drew
nine
and,
plan.
Yes, Drew and Terry and Bob, I want to get your calls, and we can
just
take more
on.
Calls at 313-298-WRIF. Let's get Terry on from Detroit, and then maybe we'll talk about Herman Cain. Terry, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, you just struck a nerve when you said Herman Cain. He's insane.
That right.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is like a business guy who has never done one thing as far as politics goes.
Yeah.
And he was having a conversation with someone, and all of a sudden he's like, yeah, you know that 999 idea of taxing everyone 9%.
Go ahead, though, Terry.
Oh, but my first concern was I was talking about the government doing subsidies now. The price of gas is very high right now. Okay. When I first bought my truck, I could fill it up for $10. Now I pay $40 to fill up the same truck. So my income is the same. Where's the other $30 supposed to come from?
Sure. Well, and also, where is it going? That's the thing. So you have ExxonMobil making more money, more profit than any corporation in the history of the world.
But it's still subsidized by the government.
Sure it is.
So why is the government subsidizing a company that's reporting an excessive amount of wealth? I'm not getting that.
Well, you really do. I mean, I know you really do. Because what it is, it's corporate looting. And the way that it makes its money is by looting people farther down in the social pyramid, which means Terry of Detroit, right?
Yes.
So they'll take $30 more from you, and then $30 more for somebody in Port Huron, and $30 more from someone in Oak Park, and then and then you put those $30 together, and you've got billions of dollars, right?
Okay, so, but for me to keep my car running on the streets now, I have to sacrifice something else.
Sure.
What is the sacrifice in? Okay, can you give up your internet so you can have gas in your car, but you need your internet?
Yeah, but the question, of course, is posed is why would a hardworking person have to give up anything when they can't afford it, wherein the people that can afford it don't want to give up anything?
And that's my point. It comes back to basic greed.
Yeah, sure. In fact, you know, I would go even further, Terry. I don't think it's just basic greed, because people can get kind of greedy, you know, even people you know and people in your family and all
that. No, that's more stingy.
But you know what? This is pathological greed. You know, that is, that it is a pathology that, I mean, because why would these guys who make billions and billions of dollars and are worth billions and billions, why wouldn't they say, wow, people are hurting? Why, I mean, maybe we should do a little for people that aren't, you know, as well situated as we are. Oh, well, we'll give a few million here. But that's not it. I mean, they could have a tax structure that returned the great amount of their wealth to the general tax fund. And that would mean, for instance, that if I've always advocated, and there's one other thing that we could ask for or demand, let's say, is that there's a $50,000 tax deduction right off the top. So in other words, if you make $51,000 a year, you pay tax on $1,000 and like that. And also the what they call the marginal tax rate, the highest tax rate, once you get over, say, $3 million, it should be like 90%. And then, you know, we wouldn't have any problem. And we could do it, all that stuff. Hey, can I tell you something? You know, Herman Cain's 999 tax program. I was just trying to go to this. Let me see if I can find this.
I mean, the people will have to be forced to pay more taxes, and the corporations will be given the break of paying way less.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, we won't have anything left to tax. I've sacrificed a lot of things.
I got you.
I gave up cable television. I gave up internet.
Yeah.
And so what's left? I mean, right now, I'm almost a bread and water. And I, you know, I'm educated. I did all the things I was supposed to do, went to school, did what I was supposed to do to get a good job. Then you get the good job, but now it's still not enough.
Yeah.
So where's the extra money going to come from?
Well, that's the question. And that's the question that all this Occupy movement is addressing. And it has to begin to do it in a way that puts pressure on the people that have the money and that have the political power, or
and
become the power
all these
itself.
Big breaks, Peter.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. I was hoping this would happen for years, and it finally got here. I'm so happy, and that's why I'm participating.
All right,
we're so
Terry.
Glad.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much. And Paul, who wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com, he suggested a bumper sticker. Now, this Herman Cain is this guy who was the CEO of Godfather's
Pizza.
Pizza, yeah. So and
Pizza Man,
and he's got this program that it would be 9% on what is it?
It's like a sales tax. Right?
Yeah, we have a 9% sales tax. Imagine that. And he said somewhere along the line here, well, some people would pay a little more. Guess who that's going to be?
You and me.
Yeah.
And the poor people, what we call that, what, a
regressive tax. And the rich people would do better. Now, Paul wrote in, and he said, how's this for a bumper sticker? Cain in 2012, and you would have 999, except it would be the German 9, meaning no. 9,
right.
9,
no,
yeah,
no,
yeah,
no.
999, no.
I don't know. I mean, it is such a pack of pathetic candidates or possible candidates for a president on the right, that these Republicans are losing their minds.
And Herman Cain, by the way, is way tuned into these multi-billionaire Koch brothers, K-O-C-H.
Yeah, and this is something that just kind of came out, isn't it?
Yeah, and so if he is supported by the Kochs, Randy Rhodes said that we should call him Koch Cain.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I think one of the biggest what appeals to these people with Cain is that he is not a long lifetime politician. Peter.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. He's the flavor of the week, contrary to what he says. He was on David Gregory. What is it? I never even saw the program, really. Meet the Press?
But I heard the interview actually on the radio.
So he said, Koch Cain, Herman Cain, 999, said his ideal justice of the Supreme Court would be Who do you think? Clarence Thomas.
Of course.
Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas got in to be a Supreme Court justice through perjurious testimony, that is, lying under oath. He is corrupt. He is linked into the Koch brothers. He's done any number of...
His wife is corrupt, too.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things is his wife is this right-wing political activist, and then Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court justice, sits and judges on some of the issues that she is bringing before the court. Yeah, so, I mean, this is... Kane said they asked him about his connection to the civil rights movement when he was, you know, like a teenager and what have you. And he said that his father had told him to stay out of trouble. And this is a lot like Condoleezza Rice, who lived in Birmingham, Alabama in, you know, the 1960s when
right.
she was a young girl. And her father, who was a prominent black minister, but
yes.
not involved in the civil rights movement, and
uh-huh.
denounced Martin Luther King. And
denounced
Martin Luther King. God. This is an African American preacher, and said that that the Birmingham civil rights demonstrators were ignorant Negroes.
My God.
Yeah, and this is so Condoleezza Rice went to tennis lessons while history was being made. And I would suggest that that's a way of saying to many of you listening, history is being made right now. And
yes.
you can either take your tennis lessons or watch television. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing wrong with tennis lessons or watching television.
Yeah.
yeah, a little entertainment. There's nothing there.
Exercise.
But in a period that, say, was like the 60s or the 30s or, you know, the 1770s or something like that, what did you do, Daddy, during that big period? Well, I didn't do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. Here is Bob and Warren. Hi, Bob. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
I love the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was down at the Occupy.
Detroit.
Helping hang some tarps and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, great.
What night?
Tonight.
Tonight. So what, give us a report.
How are they doing down there?
Well, they're doing great. They had lots of food, and they've been getting a lot of support, and hopefully they hang in there and give them help.
How many people down there?
I'd say there's a couple of hundred.
Really?
Wow.
Well, I'm going down there tomorrow. Hey, people, why don't you meet me down there?
It's fun.
Yeah.
Well,
it's good energy.
Oh, no, don't. Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
A couple of things.
Sure.
Well, first of all, it's, there's a long history of public demonstration in this country.
Sure.
And the freedom of speech is one of the things that makes this country great. And so it's only American that people speak out and have the opportunity to speak out.
Well,
not anymore.
Well, Bob, a lot of countries that you can do that in.
And that's important. And if we don't speak out, perhaps we might lose those freedoms.
Well, we're doing it. And there is some pushback. If you can see what's happened in New York City with the way the New York, the NYPD has behaved and in some other cities as well. Because, you know, you can tell how they function as just part of the corporate machinery because, there are some inconveniences involved when you like occupy an area or you start having little tent cities. I would be the first to say it's not business as normal. But if we want business as normal, we got to keep going just as things were, and people are fed up with that. So the kind of inconvenience, in fact, I saw a sign the other day. Oh, no, actually, it was a friend of mine from New York that sent it to me, that a young woman was holding a sign saying, "Sorry for the inconvenience, we're trying to change the world."
Yeah,
so that's the deal. I mean, when you think about the union movement or the civil rights movement or the American Revolution, that was kind of an inconvenience. I mean, you know...
just a little.
Yeah. The Revolutionary War. That was kind of an inconvenience. And when you had big strikes in the 1930s and even through the 1950s, those were kind of inconvenient. But there's no reason why a governmental body, whether no matter what it's, federal government or the city or a state, should not say, okay, this is not, you know, this is a little messy, you know, maybe kind of people are inconvenienced, but this is so important for a public dialogue. And you know why they don't? Because they don't want a public dialogue. They want the elites to continue running things. They, and particularly the conservatives, because again, we get to their names. They want to conserve everything as it is. They don't want to make changes. Well, they do want to make changes.
Yeah, they actually would like to take more from us.
Yeah, they want to take more from us.
And
they
keep
want
more for themselves.
And they want to give more of the billionaires more money. Well, they don't even, you know, the people that are actually the rank and file of the conservative movement, the teabaggers and people like that, they're getting looted just like the rest of us.
Silly, silly people.
Silly, silly people. All right, Bob, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call.
Yes.
We were talking about the V for Vendetta mask, and that's the one that's showing up in all these demonstrations. And here's Regina has a comment on it. Regina, hi, you're on the air. Are you, I'm sorry, I didn't press your button. I'm sorry, there you go, you're on the air.
Okay. You know what, you were talking about Halloween costumes earlier.
Yeah, we're going to.
One year I went as Clarencia Thomas. I had a black robe. I had
like a female Clarence.
Oh, okay.
His half sister.
Yeah. Okay.
And I had a meat pounder because I didn't have a gavel. And I had a Coke can, and I plucked the hair out of my head.
Yeah.
So now I knew this was in the late 70s, early 80s. I'm not sure because I'm horrible with dates unless it's the year my children were born.
Must have been at least the late 80s. I forgot when that came down, but late 80s.
Anyway,
I don't remember either.
And I'm sitting there watching Anita Hill and I'm watching the hearings. And everybody at that party, nobody had any idea who I was. And I'm going, don't you read the news?
Well, let me tell you, Regina, I was going to say, probably a lot of people don't understand. One of the things, Clarence Thomas was this sex-addicted guy, and you can, there was this book recently came out with one of his
ex-girlfriends,
and he would talk about long dong silver at the office, and he would, and he had a Coke can,
creepy,
and had a hair on it, and he said to Anita Hill, you think that's a pubic hair? You know, one of,
oh, yeah. There was an article in the Free Press about her today.
Well, she, yeah. And so, and he denied all this. I mean, total perjury. And so what Regina's talking about is, that.
And so what happens? He gets rewarded for his behavior by becoming a Supreme Court justice. Isn't this just how it always goes with these creeps?
Yep. All right, Regina, thank you. Appreciate that. Let's see. Here is Drew. Drew's in Mount Clemens. Hey, Drew, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I just want to point out that, like, all of our city governments right now, in Michigan at least, are funded by, like, court fines and court fees instead of taxes because people can't pay their taxes.
Well, that's a part of it. But, I mean, I think property taxes still represent the majority of financing for the cities. But, I mean, the city that Jalene and I live in, the budget keeps going down, 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 and the city services, you know, the mayor
closed
says,
on Friday.
Yeah, closed on Friday. And
all right, we'll get this. I'm 20 years old. I live on my own.
Yeah.
I got in trouble for an MIP over summer. It was my first MIP.
It's a minor in possession.
Oh, I had one of those.
You did? Oh, I was one, but I never got caught for it.
Sitting out in front of a bowling alley drinking some booze. Yeah. Okay.
So the judge charged me with, you know, thousands of dollars worth of fees, which went on a charge card. 30 hours community service. They won't give me bridge cards, so every hour community service, I'm giving up a meal. I mean, I explained this to the judge, and she didn't bat an eye.
Hey, well, that's not that judge has been getting in trouble for having
drunk driving sentences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
I was at my own home drinking, and the cops pulled me out of my own home because of a noise complaint.
Whoa, man, you need a better legal representation. All right, sorry to hear that, Drew, and I think there's stories by the hundreds, by the thousands like that, and that's what's wrong here. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call.
If you're going to drink, just keep the noise down.
Absolutely. yeah.
And don't drive.
Hey, you know, a little while ago, we had our bathroom redone, and went to the Home Depot and bought a toilet. I can't remember how much it was, but maybe a couple, you know, it was a real good one. So I don't know, 150, 200, I can't remember. But how about a toilet that costs $6,400?
What?
And who would buy that? Well, guess who?
The 1%.
The 1%. We'll tell you about that. And Carl and Dave and Fred and Ken, you stay on the line and we'll get you right on the air.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Is it time for a new roof? Call Sears Roofing. You can save $500 if you call right now. Just call 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Get your roofing job done right. Call Sears Roofing now. You can save $500. Call now. 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
One size does not fit all, especially when you're talking about your mortgage. Introducing the all-new Yourgage from Quicken Loans. Yourgage is better than a traditional mortgage because it conforms to your goals. In fact, it's the only home loan that allows you to custom design your term anywhere between 8 to 30 years. Here's how it works. Let's say you've got 8 years left on your mortgage and you want to refinance to a lower interest rate. The Quicken Loans 8-year fixed Yourgage can help. It keeps your term short and lowers your monthly payment. Just call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. The Quicken Loans Yourgage. It's a home loan on your terms. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030. Other restrictions apply. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425.
Yes. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you. Welcome. It's our final segment until you can hear it all over again at noon today as a podcast. Go to my website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com or WRIF.com.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, Jerry writes in, boy, talk about the links here. I wonder if I could put these all on there. The Koch brothers, who are, well, their combined fortune would put them right up with, well, right below, well, right, number two. The two of them were combined, Charles Koch and David M. Koch. And Jerry writes in the call talk yes at yahoo.com, while the average family's income has slipped dramatically in the last 10 years, and one in four children are living in poverty. Remember Shauna? We were talking about she had her three kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is, you know, that very possibly she's there now or could conceivably wind up. The Koch brothers' income in the last 10 years has soared 800%. Where did our money go? Jerry asked. They're super rich, took it. And they looted it because essentially there's X amount of wealth and it's distributed any number of ways. We used the example before. If I go to my boss and I say, hey, look, I've been such a dutiful employee here at WRIF. Can you give me a dollar an hour more? And he says, sure. Maybe he will. Maybe he's listening. That is a redistribution of income. The company has a dollar less. I have a dollar more. So the owners have a dollar less, I have an hour, and I have a dollar more. So in the same way, if there's X amount of wealth, and these brothers, the Koch brothers, K-O-C-H, they've soared 800%. It's not even so much where did our money, well, it is where did our money go. It's better put, Jerry, would be where did our money come from? It came from us. It came from us.
We're funding it, yeah.
And one of the things I'm sure that the Koch brothers and a lot of these other rich SOBs could have is a throne in their bathroom. The war for the bathroom. Many technological advances in that tiled arena have happened in commercial restrooms. Hand-free faucets and toilets. Cyclonic hand dryers. You ever use those?
What, air?
Yeah, they're like a 100-mile-an-hour wind when you, yeah. You see your skin kind of.
Yeah.
but it's coming to the American home. Earlier this year, the latest salvo was fired by the venerable bath fixture manufacturer Kohler. It produced a new toilet called the Numi, N-U-M-I.
Uh-huh.
Features a touchscreen remote control. It washes and dries its user.
Gross! Yuck!
No, it's called a bidet. They used to, but anyway.
Yeah.
Are you ready for this? Think about some of our callers that said they were security guards, and they usually make minimum wage, right?
Yeah.
The toilet costs $6,400, or 81 times the price of the basic throne at Home Depot. And but they say, why would anybody want a high-tech $6,400 toilet? And the author, Sam Grobart, says, to answer that question, I borrowed a Numi for a month and used it in my home. He said, it's possible to acclimate to such a luxury. Anyone who's ever owned a car with a backup camera or heated seats knows what this means. Features that initially seem unnecessary can become something you cannot do without. Now, here's what it has. There are no visible levers or buttons. All the Numi controls are handled through a touchscreen remote control. And we're talking about a toilet here, folks, that is larger than an iPod Touch. That remote controls flushing, cleaning, drying, music, heating, and other settings and preferences. Combinations of preferences can be stored in the user profiles for different family members. When not in use, the remote docks in a magnetic charging crate. Yeah, I don't even know that. But let's see. The rear panels are translucent. The LED lights gently illuminate the toilet when the Numi's sensor determines that the room has gone dark. Another LED is mounted in the bowl itself for additional nighttime guidance. Walk up to the Numi, and location sensors will detect your presence and cause the toilet's lid to rise, revealing the rectangular on the outside, round where it counts seat. If you're a man standing in front of the toilet, you will notice a blue beam of light projected on the right side floor adjacent to the toilet. Place your foot in the path of that beam, and the toilet seat will rise. Break the beam again, and the toilet will flush, and the seat will lower itself.
Excellent.
The seat is heated naturally. The temperature can be adjusted. If desired, Numi can also blow heated air from its base, warming your feet on chillier mornings.
I could see seriously bonding with this toilet.
The Numi has what is referred to in the industry as bidet feature. That's B-I-D-E-T.
Yes.
It can wash and dry its user, but you don't want to go there. Right?
God.
Pressure and temperature are adjustable. I want it on really high.
Full speed ahead.
Yeah. Spray patterns as well, and go from steady blast to oscillating pattern.
It's like the hose fitting.
Exactly.
The faucet.
Where Numi knows if you're sitting or standing. And it goes on and on.
Like I wonder what else Numi knows.
So.
Jeez.
And even raising the lowering of the lid has a little more pomp and circumstance that is required. While it's nice to have the Numi do it for you, you can do it a faster job yourself. The proximity sensors, the Numi was like an eager cocker spaniel, raising its lid anytime I came anywhere near it. Not now, Numi. Down, Numi.
God.
In the end, perhaps Numi's greatest flaw is that with all the logical and imaginative features, but it also assumes you have all the time in the world to play with them. On rare occasions, that may be true, but for most of us, most of the time, the bathroom is a waypoint, not a destination.
Yeah, I wonder if this thing cleans itself.
Oh, what do you think?
I don't know.
Eat the rich. Yeah, because that's the only people that can afford. All right. Let's see here. Well, let's take this call. It's Dave and Taylor wants to talk about the Republican in Florida that has advocated the firing squad instead of lethal injection. What's up, Dave? You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're great.
Hey, my thing is, I'm not positive if they do it anymore, but I know within the last couple of years, Utah State gave people a choice on death row. Either lethal injection or firing squad.
Remember, we read about that.
Yeah, no, they did. And there was a one guy. He said he wanted to know what would cost the state the most. And they said a firing squad. So he said, okay, I want to do the firing squad.
Well, no, the thing is like a lot of, I mean, if you personally went on death row and asked, you know, all the inmates that are sitting on death row what they would rather, you know, be killed by, either a needle in their arm or a shot to the chest.
Yeah.
I would guess at least half, if not more, would say a shot to the chest for dignity. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. In that article about the Republican legislator in Florida who wanted the firing squad brought back, he said that he thought that almost all of them would want the lethal injection. He thought, in other words, he said it ought to be more terrifying to them, and every day they're going to wake up and think they're going to be shot. What I wonder is who volunteers to do that. I got an idea. I'd like to shoot somebody in the chest that isn't doing anything, but it's okay because it's capital punishment. Dave, I got to rush through these calls because we're getting towards the end of the show and a lot of people waiting. Thank you
for
your
calling.
Opinion. I definitely appreciate it. And here's Carl in Armada. Hey, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to talk about Herman Cain for a couple minutes. Or not
sure.
For a couple minutes, real quick. His 999 policy, I know it's going to increase taxes on the lower class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But. Me and my father are self-employed. We run a business, and we've had to lay everybody off. And as much as I'd love to hire people back on, it's just ridiculous how much it actually costs the company to employ somebody.
Yeah.
And so while a lot of taxes will be dropped on corporations and stuff, it's not like that money is going straight to their pockets. That's going to shake down to lower classes.
Well, maybe yes, maybe no. Here's what it says in the Daily Beast by Michael Tomasky. He says that this is going to his proposal for business taxes, Cain's phase one, the way it's structured would cut taxes mostly for the largest corporations and not help small and medium-sized concerns that are 92% of businesses. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I'm not even talking about myself. You guys always skip the fact that if these corporations are paying less taxes, that's more income that they can then dispose of by hiring on more people.
They're sitting on billions. I'll tell you,
CEOs are going to continue getting all this money and just sit on it.
The reason that that companies and particularly smaller businesses aren't doing very well, the demand is lessening. It's not like if all of a sudden these companies. I mean, that really is what's called supply side economics, and it says that if you take off regulations, that's what Republicans want. If you take off regulations off of, and they usually mean corporations, but all companies. And you stop taxing them so much, they will use that money to expand their businesses. Well, how many decades do we have to go through before we realize that's not the case? And what we're doing is we're starving the government for programs that are important by not having the revenue. It's unfortunate. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Again, apologies for going by so quick. Here's Fred in Detroit. Fred, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I was originally calling about Herman Cain and Clarence Thomas.
Sure.
Because they do appear to be woefully, willfully, and unapologetically, sheltered in their views.
Sheltered? You're being nice.
We call it low information.
They are so far to the right.
Yeah.
And a couple of guys on NPR was talking about how far right Clarence Thomas is and his decisions and his views. And his friends, he don't really have any, except for the small group of people who thinks like he does.
Yeah.
And, you know, he hangs with the Mark Levins and the Rush Limbaughs. Those are his buddies.
Well, yeah, you know, actually I heard that same segment, Fred, and it struck me is how inappropriate that is. I mean, the Supreme Court justice, I mean, just that first word, the Supreme Court. In other words, it is supposed to be the final arbiter of justice. And you find out that the Supreme Court justice, first he's going to these events that are sponsored by these right-wing billionaires, the Koch brothers. His wife is this right-wing activist, and he's hanging out with the most vicious right-wing commentators in America. And so what that gives is the apparent of inappropriateness. In other words, I mean, we know that you can see by the decisions where people fall on the justices fall on the their decisions, but that certainly hanging out with those guys, I mean, he ought to be bounced off the Supreme. He ought to be impeached. He doesn't belong in the court at all.
For sure.
And you know what? You know who's just as far right is Scalia, and he's had some episodes as well. I mean, they're just so corrupt it just defies the imagination.
Well, one other thing I wanted to say too
is
that people have to remember that the reason why mortgages weren't restructured and that banks weren't loaning, you know, besides paying out huge bonuses and stuff, was that they really want a lot of confusion. They want to rip people away from their homes and their voting districts. They don't want you to be able to go and vote next year.
Well, that could be. Yeah,
because the Republicans are always trying to reduce the voting pool, because the less people vote, the better they do. Thank you, Fred. Appreciate your call.
Yes.
Now, one of the things that you may be aware of is that this Occupy movement talks about 99%. In fact, there's buttons that simply say 99%. 99%. This is Americans. This is the this Republican majority leader in the House said, that that the Occupy movement has set Americans against Americans. So it's 99% against 1%. They also get this. It's 1% against the 99%, and the 1% is winning. So that's not so good. But that's just a setup to talk to Ken and Troy, who's calling. Thanks. Hey, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good. This is interesting. Tell me what...
I'm not really into politics that much, but this Herman Cain thing, I'm more into music. Okay. And you know what it got me thinking of?
What's that?
There's a song called 999 by Keith Richards, and I think he ought to go after him for infringement rights.
Yeah, no doubt.
And the name of the album is Main Offender.
Wow.
How ironic. You know?
Wow.
When I saw this up on our screen, I thought it meant that that Keith Richard had just written a song called 999.
No, this came out a few years ago.
Okay. In fact, I totally read this wrong. I thought it said 99%. I'm totally out of it. Oh, is it getting late?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. All right, I'll go check it out. You know, I'll tell you, I love Keith Richard.
I do. Hey, man, you should do it.
I just saw something. He just went through a divorce, and I think he's got some new...
Oh, poor guy.
He's already moved 20, on. He's
24.
She's 20, I think it was 7.
Did you see the Stones movie, Shine a Light?
No, I haven't checked it out yet. I gotta get that one.
It's absolutely incredible. It's good enough.
I saw it on
IMAX. And if you want to see like 40-foot high face of Keith Richards,
I've seen that one. I've seen Keith when he played with the Expensive Winos.
Sure.
Oh man,
he's not.
He's the best.
Well, he is, and you know, it's interesting that here he's playing these songs that he's probably played 100 times before. These guys are millionaires. And he looked like he was in heaven. I mean,
well,
he was enjoying himself.
Well, and what is our caller's name?
Oh, where are we? Sorry, Ken. Yeah.
Ken says he's into music.
Yeah.
And it's that mode. I'm a musician. You go into that mode, and, I mean, everything can be wrong with the world, but the minute you play, bam, it's all gone.
What else I thought of was that last game with the Tigers and the Rangers, you know, the score was?
Let's not talk about it. What is it?
What?
I know, 5. You know, 15-5. I was thinking of 5-15 by The Who.
Oh.
Well, you can relate everything. You know, there's a book called The Green Book of Rock and Roll, and it lists every topic under the sun and what songs have those as a theme. You can imagine.
Love it.
Love is pretty big. But
huge.
Yeah, but you can go to, I don't know, you can go to baseball or whatever.
Oh, wow, nice. Yeah.
I didn't even want to talk about the Tigers thing.
Yeah, move on.
All right,
along.
Ken. Yeah.
Right.
But they, you know what? What a run. In fact, I think it was the headline of one of the papers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's what a ride, they said.
What a ride it was. Yeah, all right. We got a couple more calls. Let's get those. Here is Anonymous. Boy, are you connected, Anonymous, with the group that's been doing all the hacking?
No.
Good.
Because of my job.
Oh, okay.
There's so many issues to talk about, but I'm going to talk about the drug wars issue.
Okay.
Because
tell me quick, though, because we're almost out of time.
Okay. I'm going to go real fast.
Sure.
They want to run, rent for office, but anyways, they have not mentioned one time. They talk about wasting money on military, everything else. Not once have they ever mentioned how much they spend on the war on drugs, which is almost $1 trillion.
Well, actually, I have seen. Yeah, I mean, talk about the war on drugs. I mean, that's all hooked into the prison industrial complex, and which gets clients for that ripoff, and it violates our fundamental civil rights. Our bodies are our own, and the government does not have a right to tell us what we can put in it, even if it's harmful to us. But that said, there are cropping up. I mean, what people talk about the rich and Wall Street, but there are a lot of other issues being raised. And one of them, Mr. Anonymous, is the drug war and the waste of money that that is. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
And the failure.
The failure. Well, it's not a failure. I mean, because what it is not about stopping drugs. It's about reproducing itself as a way to transfer private wealth through our taxes to the government to spend on repressing people's right to do what the hell they want with their consciousness. Here's Matt. Matt's in Monroe, and he was at the Occupy movement in Detroit. Matt, hi. You're on the air.
Yeah, absolutely, Peter. How are you? Thanks
Good.
For taking my call.
Tell me quick, though, because we're running out of time.
Yeah, no problem. As optimistic as I am about the 99% Occupy movement, I'm a little apprehensive in terms of getting out from underneath of the thumb of the lobbyists in Washington.
Sure.
I think if there's anything that, you know, would really, you know, sort of solidify the movement or anything that, you know, people should really rally against is the fact that our democracy has been hijacked. And, you know, it also makes me wonder how true that would be for other governments around the world and, you know, where this is really going to end up in the long run. I'm kind of cynical, I guess, and just wondering what kind of thoughts you had on that.
Well, I don't know where. I have no idea. It could dissipate in 2 weeks, or it could be world revolution. You know, not in the old-fashioned 20th century sense that was called for by, you know, like radical leftists, but a whole restructuring of the government and the whole idea of what a concept, what we always open our show with, the John Lennon song, Power to the People. And
certainly.
I mean, there's a facade of power to the people, but the real decisions are made by a very small core of people. And it's this, you know, the elite, the ruling class, whatever you want to call them. It's the golden rule. He who has the gold rules.
Yeah.
And we want to end that. We want to end the rule of money. All right.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Let me get my one last call in here. Mike from Detroit, you got to do it ultra quick. Go ahead. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good. Give me a couple sentences.
So my point is that democracy is not natural to the human condition. You go to any playground across America or anywhere for that, you have kids playing. But I remember playing on the playground when I was a kid. There was always some bully or some kid in charge. Dictators are the natural state of things. So for a democracy, we have to work to achieve a democracy. We have to fight for our democracy, and we have to be a citizen. We have responsibilities, and we have to work to uphold our democracy because it will be hijacked, because naturally we deter towards a dictatorship.
Well, I think what happens is that the power mongers, the people that want power over people, they're at it all the time. And most of us just want to hang out with our friends and our family.
Yeah.
Have a good time.
Have a good life.
Enjoy the good life. They're not scheming how to get more money or scheming how to control more people. Look, this is exactly the way we have to go. That people, one of the things that the Occupy movement says is this is what democracy looks like.
That's right.
Right now, Grand Central Park in downtown Detroit is the place to be. I'll be down there tomorrow, and maybe some of you can meet me down there. All right, Mike, thanks for being our last caller. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. And stay tuned.
Got
an interesting, it was a great show because of our callers.
Absolutely.
We did okay, too. Jalene?
We hold our own. Yes, Peter. Occupy Detroit.
Occupy Detroit.
Talk to you next week.
Occupy everywhere. Stay tuned. Got an interview with Danny Glover coming.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
After discovering and amassing some of the most sought-after hoards of gold coins of the past 100 years, the New York Mint is announcing the public release from its vaults of the famous $10 gold Indian, struck from 1907 to 1933. It's amazing that this hoard of coins even exists. When the nation was gripped by an economic frenzy in 1933, millions of gold coins were officially recalled and lost forever to government meltdowns. But now, the New York Mint is releasing a limited number of these sought-after $10 gold Indians on a first-come, first-served basis. basis. Call now for free historical information. You'll also receive a collector's DVD absolutely free. Call 1-800-925-9477. All of these magnificent $10 gold Indians are security in uncertain economic times, so both collectors and investors will be eager to get their hands on this important part of American history. Act fast to ensure you don't miss this special opportunity. For free historical information and a free collector's DVD, call 1-800-925-9477. That's 1-800-925-9477.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, listen to this. You may be eligible to receive tax-free income and eliminate your mortgage payments. It's all through a government-insured program called a reverse mortgage. And now you can get a free guide that tells you how. It's offered by One Reverse Mortgage, and it's yours free by calling 1-888-400-0901. The federal government created reverse mortgages specifically to make your retirement easier. They can help you stay in your home and turn your home's equity into tax-free income. You'll never make another mortgage payment. Find out more about this government program and get your free guide. Pick up the phone right now and call 1-888-400-0901. Find out why millions of Americans are considering reverse mortgages. There's no obligation. Equal housing lender not available in all states. Call now. 1-888-400-0901. That's 1-888-400-0901.
My dad is my hero. He goes into burning buildings. He finds people inside who need to be saved. He helps them get out, even when he can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My dad is a firefighter, but the best thing he can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
1-0-1-0-1 WRIF.
What's up, everybody? This is Sully from Godsmack.
Hello, Motor City. This is Mike McCready from Pearl Jam.
Hello, Motor City. This is Peter Pace from Led Zeppelin. Your radio is locked on 101 WRIF. If it rocks, it's on the roof.
Everything that rocks.
Do you know someone who's having a birthday this month? Don't let the date sneak up and catch you unprepared. Have ProFlowers send beautiful birthday flowers. They make flower deliveries easy and affordable. And get this incredible radio special. Yours right now. 100 stunning birthday blooms plus a free glass vase for just $19.99. Play it smart. Go online to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. Why overpay at a florist when you can get huge savings on one full 100 stunning birthday blooms for just $19.99 at ProFlowers. They'll even throw in a free vase. With a deal like this, you can take care of all the important people in your life and schedule that special birthday delivery weeks in advance. But hurry, this $19.99 birthday deal won't last forever. And the only way to get it is to go to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. One more time, write it down. ProFlowers.com. Secret code FAST. Got it? ProFlowers.com. Secret code FAST.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. What a pleasure it is to bring to our microphones one of America's favorite actors, Danny Glover. Danny Glover is probably best known for many of his roles in the Lethal Weapon series with Mel Gibson. But he has, I was researching this, the number of movies he's done is absolutely incredible. It would take me the longest time. I remember the ones I've seen, The Color Purple, some of the Predator films, and I forgot that he was also in one of my favorite Clint Eastwood films, which was also Danny Glover's debut on film, which was Escape from Alcatraz. But this is an interest. But Danny Glover is also a producer, and he has co-produced a documentary called The Black Power Mixtape, 1967 to 1975, and it has incredible film from that tumultuous era where people were rioting, the police were beating people and shooting people down in the streets. It was an era of the Black Panther Party, of Angela Davis, of so much more. But let's welcome Danny Glover to the Peter Werby Show. Thanks for joining me, Danny.
All right. Thank you, Peter. It's great to be on your show, man.
And the film itself, the footage of all of these people from a time now seems long gone, probably to many of our listeners, ancient history. Tell us where you found all this footage and how you got how you came to this Black Power mixtape.
Well, first of all, I had to thank my producing partner, Jocelyn Barnes, because she's just phenomenal. We position our company, Louverture Film, to support filmmakers and to have this type of material come to our, be placed within our, you know, our home. We try to find a home for the kind of work that Jørgen Olsen, the director of this extraordinary documentary, to a place for them. And that's because of Jocelyn and the work that we've done. We've done films such as Trouble the Water, Soundtrack to Revolution, Africa Unite, celebrating the 60th birthday of Bob Marley. We've done narratives such as Bamako, two Palestinian films, The Salt of the Sea, and the by Anne-Marie Jassour, and also by Ilya Suleiman, The Time That Remains. So, plus we've done a movie, a Thai movie, which won the Palme d'Or, which we're producers on, and that was a great film, Uncle Boomy, who recalls his past life, by Apa Chapong, great, very creative Thai Lanese director. So this is the family that this is our family. And so it's no accident that Black Power Mixtape would come to us. And it came to us by virtue of Jørgen Olsen coming to our door. And once Jocelyn saw this, she said, Danny, you have to see this material. You have to see this footage. And certainly I got a chance to see it and meet Jørgen and the producers in Sweden in June of 2009 when I was shooting the film there. In Sweden, they came in from Stockholm, and we had a three-hour meeting, and we talked about everything, and we talked about contextualizing this material. Because now we stand back from the material, particularly if you see it from this vantage point, and see the relationship between the Black Power movement and the Civil Rights movement. This whole long journey, this long connected journey of Black liberation. And not only that, as it's expressed in the film, some of the images and some of the techniques of organizing around the Black Power movement certainly were used in the subsequent movements, the women's liberation movements, gay rights movements, and all those movements. So you can't dismiss this particular period and the context of the period itself. As Paul Robeson says, that each generation makes its own history, and that history that they make, is they're accountable for that history that they make. This generation of young activists made their history, not unlike the young activists who are right now populating our cities with occupations in Wall Street and L.A. and Seattle and Oakland, Berkeley, and other places.
Detroit.
Around the country, and Detroit itself.
Yeah.
So all of these kind of things, we understand it. We understand how people respond to what the contradictions are and the way in which they use their dialectics to understanding those contradictions is critical and important to understanding history. What happened in that moment, in a period when we have Watts in 1965, the revolt in Watts 1965, the revolt in Detroit 1967, the revolt in Newark 1967, and we go on, and the many revolts after King's assassination in 1968. And we understand this movement, you know, in what we consider to be an occupied community, an occupied community. All over the country, these communities were being occupied. And simply with the Black Panther and the Black Panther Party, Black Panther and the Black Power Movement talked about and referencing this occupation were simply things like self-defense and community control of the police, or free clinics, or breakfast for children, or schools or freedom schools, you know. The whole concept of freedom schools came out of the organizing in the South with the Freedom School of 1964 and the organizing around there. So all these ideas certainly are manifestations of a much larger process of Black liberation.
And we can see this, its origins, in this brand new documentary. It's called The Black Power Mixtape, 1967 to 1975. It was this footage of the era was just found in Sweden, in the basement of a Swedish television station. Swedish journalists had come here to the United States so fascinated by a country that was just ablaze and police shooting people in the streets and demonstrations and what have you. And Danny Glover has co-produced this film. It's opening at the Main Theater in Royal Oak on Friday, October 21st. And I've seen the screener of it, and I would say don't miss it. And either if you've never seen it, you may even think, oh, well, I've seen civil rights stuff in school. This is fresh film. It's the people that made it all happen. And also, don't you think that it fleshes them out as human beings rather than just icons or, in some people's eyes,
well, village? I mean, Angela Davis in the midst of a trial, which is designed to murder her, to take her life, talks about violence. And it's a brilliant soliloquy, soliloquy. In terms of a Shakespeare, but a brilliant analysis of violence. And when we think of violence in that sense, and the act of even slavery is a violent act. The act of slavery and the act of murdering and massacring Native Americans are violent acts. We never think about that, the context of that. So the process, the act of controlling and subjugating the labor movement were violent acts. You call out the army. You call out the National Guard. You use the police force. Those are all violent confrontations. Sure. The terror that exists in the South with slavery, post-slavery, and post-Reconstruction, all of it, the civil rights movement, were violent acts. They were violence. It was terror. People were terrorized. Let's look at the truth of this country and look at it from that vantage point.
Sure.
You know? And you have to look at, when you look at the truth of this country, you see how this whole system is predicated on violence. And it exists today. Whether it's the occupation of Afghanistan, the occupation of Iraq, it's violent acts.
Danny Glover,
it's the same kind of violence.
This chronicles the period, the footage that we see in the Black Power mixtape that's going to be starting at the Main Theater. Covers the period 1967 to 1975. You attended San Francisco State University, and you were a member of the Black Student Union at that time. Did you know any of the principals there, the Black Panthers or the other people?
Well, we had a very close relationship with the Black Panther Party at that time. We were very much involved in what was we were very much involved and very supportive of the student strike in 1968, and we had political education class with them. George Murray, who was a member of the BSU and a member of the Central Committee of the Black Student Union, was the Minister of Education for the Black Panther Party. So there are very close ties between the Black Panther Party and other community organizations. What the Black Student Union was a community, not only a student union, on campus, it had extensive ties to the communities. Whether it's Hispanic community through its allies in the Hispanic community or the Black community itself. Fillmore, the traditional Black community of the Fillmore district in San Francisco and the southeast part of San Francisco, the Baby Hunters Point district as well. These were where we were involved in programs, whether they were educational programs. San Francisco State was unique that it had a tutorial system of programs with about 12 to 13 chapters around the city. We were involved in that. We were also involved in the struggle around empowerment during the movement of gentrification or mm-hmm. the attempt to gentrify or redevelop those particular areas, where organized community organizations such as Western District Community Organization, WACO, was a very important fixture in that struggle, which is a multiracial organization. WACO was so this is where the students, I think the Black Student Union quite unique, and that kind of work methodology, work process came out of the experience of young people for who had been part of SNCC, who came back to San Francisco State.
The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, right.
Student Nonviolent Coordinating State. People like Jimmy Garrett and others. So automatically, 1967, just as the Black Panther Party is emerging and the split in SNCC thing is happening, we begin to have relationship with Stokely Carmichael, Ralph Featherstone, H. Rap Brown. All of them were always out of San Francisco.
And you knew them. You met them. Yeah.
I met them.
All right. So here we have.
Okay, I was a 20-year-old student, man. You know, all I can do, all these men and women I had followed from the time that I was 14, 15 years old during the Freedom Rides. So I knew then who they were.
Sure.
I knew who Bob Moses was. You know, I knew who Stokely Carmichael was. I knew who John Lewis was. You know, all those people, I knew who they were when I was in high school. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Because I followed them. Because what made it remarkable for me was they were not that much older than I was.
Let me ask you this. So here's Danny Glover, a Black radical activist. So many of those people wound up being killed, as we see in your film, The Black Power Mixtape, and went to prison, and yet you went on to incredible heights in many ways as a mainstream American actor known and loved by so many, and yet you still retain that radical sensibility about the society in which they live. What was the path of Danny Glover from...
In this country, in several cases like Kent State and others, you know, students often get a pass in some sense. That may be about the case in the future, but actually, we were students, and our main body of activity was not only to study and analyze the situation, we took it a step further and found ourselves being engaged in the situation. You know, it's like a journalist who is not simply a journalist, but a journalist who has a passion for social justice and who is active in what he does, or a writer, or an artist, or a public intellectual like Cornel West. They're simply at a university. They're simply right there discussing the issue and engaged with organizations that are organized to work to change the situation. So that's the critical part of understanding that. So even as students, we were students, there was a distance that simply was, whether it's artificial or not, except when we had the strike of 1968 and we had the tax squad out on campus for 3 or 4 months. Whether that's the case, there's an artificial separation between students and was. So, and my career goal, my career design was to be a part of community service. Exactly that. And mm-hmm. I went on from that particular point from 1971 through January 1972 to January 1978. For 6 years, I was involved in the Office of Community Development and the Model Cities Program in San Francisco. So these same communities that I was involved in and engaged in as a student, there I was having a job working with the poverty program or the community development program.
Well, how did you become an actor then? That's an amazing story.
Well, it comes out of so many things. We did something at a point in time. This shows you the evolution of the Black Student Union in the sense in what was happening. And we were always trying to find a way in which we were able to set the table for what happened on campus, but also find ways of connecting what happened on campus to the community. In the spring of 1967, we brought in Mary Baraka out to San Francisco State for a semester. Leroy Jones, the leading proponent of the Black Arts Movement at that moment. It was a coup d'etat. We brought him out there. He knows San Francisco because he'd been out there in the Beat Generation. We brought him out to San Francisco State in 1967, spring of 1970. He spent that time developing what he called a community communication program. Now, that fits right into the black student movement's objective. Now, that further entrenches us in the community in terms of that Black arts community. It also provides a platform where we present plays in the community, whether it was at the Betrayal Hill Neighborhood House in Betrayal Hill, which is primarily a large Black community there, or whether it was Delaney College in Merritt College in Oakland, in all these different venues. It became the focal point when we brought Baraka out there, as a focal point of another level. That's when I first got enacted. That's the first time I ever stepped on the stage, 1967. I was in one of the plays. I was responsible responsibility as a member of the Central Committee was to organize the cultural activities then as a result of that one play. And so when I came back to acting while employed with the city and county of San Francisco and doing it at night, I began doing improv. Improv led me to end up at the American Conservatory of Theater, ACT, in August in a night program where I worked during the day, went to acting school at night for 5 nights a week and Saturday all day for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I did that while working during the day and while at the same time and with helping my wife raise a child. We were raising a child at that time, being our first child. And so those kind of things. So in that second year of May 1976, in the regular program, ACT and I had a regular program, this Black Actors Workshop. You can Google it. Black Actors Workshop at ACT was a special program because the American Conservatory Theater had to meet certain affirmative action in order to receive the money received on the federal level and other places, affirmative action objectives, you know.
Sure.
So they set up the Black Actors Workshop. I came there the first 2 years, and it was remarkable for me. You know, I was there learning the craft of acting, and at the same time, doing movement, speech, scene study, all the things that you do in acting school at the time. And also, that second year when I was there, Delroy Lindo and Denzel Washington came to the regular program for a year. Delroy for 2 years, Denzel for a year. Oh. And I met them. And so what was critical for me, as I began to put all this together, I had to find a voice for me. Somebody who wrote for me, a writer, you know, who was able to kind of teach me the craft of acting at the same time, also provide a space for me to say what was important in the world and whose side I was on in the world. And I found that writer in the form of Ethel Fugard, the great South African playwright. So I did all of it. I began to take Fugard, and Fugard was my channel, my vehicle. So not only that positioned me in my involvement in the anti-apartheid movement in the 70s, but it also taught me the craft of acting You only can learn the craft of acting by doing the work of great writers, whether it's Lorraine Hansberry or Arthur Miller or Shakespeare or Stennis, I mean, or Chekhov. That's how you learn the craft of acting, you know, and the nuance of language. And when the plays, when Fugard did what he did, he was at the top of his game. And so that provided the vehicle so it can maintain the plays themselves, which were about the human existence, albeit situated in a system of apartheid, were brilliant. You know, from Sears Way Bonzi Is Dead to The Island to Blood Knot to Bozeman and Lena to Master Harold and the Boys, which I did on Broadway, and Blood Knot off Broadway, and also A Lesson from Allows, this brilliant piece which I did with Joan Allen at the Steppenwolf.
You know, Danny Glover, I wish we had about 2 hours. We've got about 2 minutes left. We've scratched the surface on all of it.
But that's what brought me to acting, you know. And as a result of that, you know, it gave me another path. So by 1976, I had decided that this was the path I was going. I had already been with the city and county in San Francisco for 4 years. I was going to spend 76 and 77 with them and leave in January 1st, 1978 to pursue acting.
Danny Glover.
But I began to kind of, as I said, be able to kind of visualize my own growth. And Fugard was essential to that. I'm not an actor if there wasn't perhaps Fugard at the off guard. But there are many things that happen in one's life. If they have changed differently, you're not who you are, you know?
Well, this, you know, as I'm looking over all of these questions that I say I need another couple hours for, and we've got about a minute or two left, what we're talking about as the central focus of all of this and learning an incredible amount about Danny Glover and how he became an actor is the Black Power mixtape, 1967-1975, which Danny Glover co-produced. It's going to start Friday, October 21st, at the Main Theater. We got about a minute and a half. I know the obvious answer to this, but and it's sort of a very leading question. Who should see this? And it's a film about Black Power, so they would say, "Oh, well."
Those are people. Everyone should see it, and certainly the demographic. When you make a film, you don't make a film for everybody. But I want young people to see it because this is a young Angela Davis, less than 30, a young Bobby Seale, a young Huey P. Newton, a young Captain Cleaver, a young Stokely Carmichael, all the people you've seen were young people that sense. They have been engaged in struggle long before this moment. You know, they've all been involved and engaged in struggle long before. And they come out of essentially the Civil Rights Movement. If you look at them all, they come out of the Civil Rights Movement. And you see the connection from the movement. So at this particular point, as we see young people sit out and occupy all these places, and they understand that they're not far removed from what happened during the Black Power movement, that the connection between this movement and all the movements that have happened, because they're ultimately movements, imaginative movements, to open up this space called democracy. They're imaginative movements which move toward not only revolution, but evolution and transformation. That's what the movement, but it's a human story.
This
is who we are being here in this world. We can take labor leaders. We can take the labor from the time from over the last 200 years and look at what has happened and what has been generated through that. So that's what we want to see this.
You know what I want to see, Danny Glover? I want to see your autobiography. I hope you're working it. Listen, we're out of time completely. We'll have to do this again sometime. We never talked about you, and I don't even have even more than like 6 seconds. We didn't talk about your Detroit connection. We didn't talk.
I signed out the great sleep off to Rich Feldman.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, whenever I come to Detroit, I'm going to look out for Grace Lee Boggs and Rich Feldman. You know what I'm saying?
I do indeed. Danny Glover, you're the best. I want to thank you so much for sharing your time. I know you got so many projects going. We want to, hopefully you're going to get your film on Toussaint Louverture, The Liberator of Haiti, going. Thank you so much for being on the broadcast, and we need a few more hours, so let's try to do it in the future.
Let's try to do it in the future. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Danny Glover.
This is Night Call. on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
I believe I can do anything. So when it came to learning a new language, I knew I had to do it the way I learn. No books, no memorizing or translating. I wanted to learn the same way I learned my first language, naturally. That's why I chose Rosetta Stone.
Rosetta Stone invites you to be a part of its biggest language learning event in history. Because in 2011, we want to help 3 million people learn a new language. That's why we're going to give you an absolutely free demo of our language immersion technology. To participate in this free nationwide event, just call 1-800-650-4747.
Si yo puedo hacerlo, usted puede hacerlo. If I can do it, you can do it.
To participate in this free nationwide event, call now for your free demo from Rosetta Stone. Call 1-800-650-4747. That's 1-800-650-4747.
Did you know that if you're a woman over 40, you need to work out at least an hour a day just to maintain your current weight? An hour at the gym every day without losing a pound? That's ridiculous. Hi, I'm Steve Bostic, president of Right Size Smoothies, and when I heard that, I was shocked, because I know that if you feed your body right, you can lose weight in no time. That's why I'm going to let anyone who calls today try my weight loss smoothies for 2 full weeks. I'll even personally guarantee that you'll see the weight fall right off. To claim your 2-week trial, call now and receive free shipping and handling. The number is 1-800-644-1383. And now I've made my smoothies even better, because I'm going to guarantee the first 100 callers a 2-week weight loss trial. I'll even include free shipping and handling, plus my revolutionary blender bottle, absolutely free. But you have to call 1-800-644-1383. That's 1-800-644-1383.
These days, people of all ages, including adults, can have a perfect smile. Thanks to today's technology, people with crooked teeth may no longer need to wear metal braces. One option many adults prefer is invisible braces. Instead of the typical metal bands or brackets that are cemented to teeth, these braces are clear plastic trays. Some advantages of invisible braces are they can be removed for eating and for brushing and flossing. They are practically invisible to see, and they are less irritating to gums than traditional braces. Keep in mind that invisible braces are only available for people who need minor corrective work. If you are considering braces and would like to learn more about invisible braces, speak with your dentist. You're never too old for a beautiful smile. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez Howell. For more information, visit our website at ada.org.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werbe here with you. Remember that musical that was also made into a film called Cabaret? Joel Grey, who's the MC of the Cabaret, where everything revolves around, sings this song, Money Makes the World Go Round. And hey, we know that. There are 700 billionaires in the world that have a net worth of over $2 trillion, and they are the ones that are being confronted as we speak right now. first in Wall Street and then in Occupy everywhere else under the sun. In fact, there's occupations going on every continent except for Antarctica, and we'll throw that out as a challenge. We are recording this on Wednesday, the 12th, and 2 days later after this, and the Friday before you're hearing this, Occupy Detroit began. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that our lives are determined by a financial elite that really destroys the capacity for democracy, in my estimation. But let's find out what my guest thinks about all of this and get the title, What Comes After Money? Most of us can't believe anything could. Doesn't money make the world go round? And it's a series of essays from Reality Sandwich, and you can go to Reality Sandwich on the Internet. I'll get the exact URL for it when we talk to our guest. But it's essays from Reality Sandwich on transforming currency and community. It's edited by Daniel Pinchak and also Ken Jordan. Daniel Pinchbeck, let me say his name correctly. Daniel Pinchbeck is the editorial director of Reality Sandwich. He's co-founder of the Evolver Social Network and the author of several books, including 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, and also Breaking Open the Head, A Psychedelic Journey into the Heart of Contemporary Shamanism. We are reaching Daniel Pinchbeck in New York City, the heart of it all these days. Daniel Pinchbeck, I don't know why I'm having so much trouble saying your name. Daniel Pinchbeck, there you go. Sorry, people always stumble over my name, and yours is an easy one. Welcome to the broadcast, and apologies for mauling your name. Tell me about Reality Sandwich, and give me the correct URL, please.
Well, Reality Sandwich is a web magazine. We founded about maybe 3.5 years ago, and it's www.realitysandwich.com.
Okay, there we go. What comes after money? As I said, most people can't imagine anything. What is this book all about?
Well, yeah, I'm pleased with the title, which I came up with, and essentially, there were many tens of thousands of years where humans existed on this planet without money, so we're raising this provocative idea that what comes after it? It's not necessarily an eternal thing. It's not like a molecule or a crystal or something. It's something that humans constructed for a set of purposes, and more people are feeling that the believing that the current financial system is reaching a kind of terminal crisis that's not going to be something that can be just reformed away, that it needs to be a more deep systemic transformation and a kind of realization that, that we need to do something different, So in the book we talk to, we have essays from a wide variety of thinkers on the subject. Some of them economists, some of them more visionary, some of them journalists, some of them essayists. Really looking at this question of what would be beyond this current financial system, so basically, like, we have this a monoculture of money. We have one basic means to exchange value for everything in our society, and what a lot of these thinkers are now arguing is that that's a very rigid and unnecessarily kind of a flat system, that actually you could develop different ways for people to exchange value, that actually a lot of cultures in the past had different means for that.
Well, this seems like a real, left turn, I guess, from your previous books, 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, and Breaking Open the Head, A Psychedelic Journey into the Heart of Contemporary Shamanism. I wouldn't, if I saw those books, I wouldn't think you'd also had written eloquently, as you do in your opening essay, The Impossible Alternative, and What Comes After Money. How did this shift come about?
Well, I mean, actually, I think if you read those books, you would see that it's a clear line of development. I mean, for me, I go back to my first experiences with psychedelics. I mean, my first book, Breaking Open the Head, is kind of looking at the shamanic worldview, non-ordinary states of consciousness that can be accessed through visionary plants and chemicals such as LSD and psilocybin, and especially ayahuasca from the Amazon, and iboga, which is a plant from Africa. And part of what I recognized from those initial experiences that I had, like, way back in college, was almost like a deconditioning. It's like we're so immersed in our society, and it's so totalizing that we forget you know, that the things around us are actually human-made constructs, you know, whether it's the way we design our buildings or our streets or our government or our political system or our monetary system, you know, these have just sort of in a way gotten away from us and we've reified them and we then believe that they're kind of like inevitable and absolute. So I think that one of the really fascinating aspects of the psychedelic experience is that it kind of deconditions you from your own personality, from your own sense of what's you know, quote unquote real, and from all these social sort of institutions that have developed around us, you know, and then from that perspective, you can ask the question of like, well, you know, how could we use our human intelligence and creativity to design systems that would be more, you know, kind of comprehensively successful? I mean, a big kind of leitmotif in my work lately has been the work of Buckminster Fuller, design scientist. And if you look, I did a film, actually the film is now streaming on Netflix. It's called 2012 Time for Change. And Buckminster Fuller really became one of our major figures for the film. And, you know, he also had this realization that, you know, that we had a choice coming up between utopia or oblivion, that either humanity was going to figure out how to create a world that works for everybody or we weren't going to make it on the planet. And I feel very deeply that's what the Occupy Wall Street crowd is kind of resonating with. I mean, in a way, I can understand why they can't kind of come up with, a set of clear demands right now because the transformation that needs to take place is a very profound kind of systemic paradigm shift.
My guest is Daniel Pinchbeck, and he is the co-editor of What Comes After Money, Essays from Reality Sandwich on Transforming Currency and Community. It's published by Evolver Editions. You can go to evolvereditions.com. More on that later. Well, I always say jokingly, or maybe not so jokingly, on the talk shows that I do, that I say, yeah, I experimented with marijuana and psychedelic drugs when I was in college. And then I say, and the experiment was a success. But frequently when you admit behavior like that, people say, hey, you know, no wonder. What's this guy smoking? I mean, the idea of a transformation of such magnitude that we could actually get off a cash economy, a money economy, but in many ways, or maybe absolutely, money and wealth it has a big illusory aspect to it, doesn't it? I mean, if they said, okay, I mean, I read that figure, and it's from your book, the 700 billionaires with a combined net worth of $2 trillion, if you called, that's not that many, 700 of these mostly guys in, and said, okay, we want you to bring all your money and put it on the table, they'd go, right? I mean, it's not there.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, the figures. There's lots of amazing figures about the level of inequity that we've kind of reached. I mean, I think it's 7,500 people in the U.S. control 3/4 of the nation's assets and so on. Exactly. I mean, one of the political philosophers that I really love right now is this guy Antonio Negri, and he collaborated on a couple of books in English. One is called Multitude, one is called Empire. And one of the things they discuss in that book is that, you know, if you look at what capital is, ultimately, in a sense, it's ultimately a social relation, or in other words, you could say it's a belief system. You know, if a billionaire walks into the room, everybody reacts as though he's got, like, you know, a bulletproof armor all around him and is like this powerful being. But actually, that's all just a mental hallucination. Ultimately, that our society is based on a set of social agreements that have become beliefs. And what happens during times of insurrection, rebellion, revolution is that those beliefs are called into question. And, new agreements have to be made. So the question is whether we're really moving towards that time. And part of my life right now is very interesting because I bridge a lot of different worlds. I'm friends with a lot of very wealthy people and also a lot of the people protesting down, you know, on Wall Street. And I see in the 1% this kind of struggle to come to consciousness and you know, because I don't think that these people are bad people. In a way, they've just been ignorant and the system has been serving them very well. And now they're beginning to wonder, you know, what they're going to have to give up or you know, what process goes on. You know, I think it's a very, very exciting time. I mean, you know, beyond the economic inequity, you know, the unfortunately, the system that we're now in is really having a disastrous effect on the ecology of the planet. And is really putting our future in jeopardy as a species, you know. So that underlying, you know, this economic crisis, we also have to think about how we move into a global civilization that's fully resilient and really supports healthy ecosystems, biodiversity, you know, healthy local communities, and so on.
Well, very few people, other than the revolutionaries themselves, will accept revolution at as the first alternative. And talking about eliminating a whole system, world monetary system, is pretty revolutionary. And you mentioned,
Okay, so let me just clarify.
Okay, go ahead.
It's not really about like eliminating. Obviously, we need to be able to exchange value.
Right.
And you know, we have a very complex society. I mean, you have indigenous cultures which are based on the gift. You know, they were gift economies, but they didn't really need to. They didn't have that many reasons to exchange value because, in a sense, they were all kind of you know, independent. They could live off the land and so on. So now we've created a system where, yes, we have to make these very complicated exchanges. The problem we have is that the money system that we're currently using has a set of beliefs and behavior patterns inscribed in it, you know, because it enforces artificial scarcity. You know, if you go to a bank and you take out a loan, you know, the bank gives you that money, but, you know, you're not given the interest on the loan that you have to bring back. So then you're kind of forced to go into society and compete against everybody else in society to bring back that extra money. So the way we've constructed money as a tool is enforcing aggressive and competitive behavior, and automatically it creates winners and losers. You know, on a deeper level, you could look at something like the stock market. It's kind of like we've constructed a system of game rules, and then we've created these artificial life forms that we've called corporations, and we force them to play by these game rules. You know, so for instance, they have to maximize shareholder value. You know, they have to increase profit no matter what. So in that sense, you can't even really blame a company like British Petroleum for what happened in the Gulf. Their mandate is to maximize shareholder value. Therefore, they're going to have to behave, you know, in certain ways. Like, they're going to have to undercut expensive environmental safeguards. They're going to do whatever they can. So what we have to do is now come to a realization that the game rules that we've constructed are enforcing, you know, suicidal behavior. And then we have to reconstruct a different game.
My guest is Daniel Pinchbeck, and he is the co-editor, along with Ken Jordan, of What Comes After Money, Essays from Reality Sandwich on Transforming Currency and Community. It's published by Evolver Editions. You can go to evolvereditions.com, and there'll be a link on my website as well, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. I want to get back, though, to the idea of just value and worth and how these guys are worth $2 trillion, or when you say somebody like the mayor of New York, Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, who just added almost $2 billion to his wealth. And, I mean, he doesn't have that in cash. And one of the things, you know, that the
but even if he had it in cash, what difference would that make?
Yeah, well,
even if he had it in gold, what difference would that make?
Well, yeah.
I mean, you know, none of it really makes much of a difference. The whole thing is a belief system.
I agree. Sort of a counter beliefs system when it comes to money and how and monetary policy, pardon me, is these people who say we got to get rid of the Federal Reserve, and it's issuing fake money, and because it doesn't have any value behind it. And I wrote an article called "Isn't All Money Fake?" Do you agree with that? I mean, is it? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to give a showstopper there.
No, for sure.
But
the point is that we have to recognize that we're choosing to kind of invest certain systems with you know, beliefs. You know, we're making social agreements, you know, but we have to make good ones. And, you know, we've just inherited the inertia of this whole system, and now we can see that since it's moving towards, you know, really ecological suicide for us, you know, it's time for there to be a kind of awakening and a realization. But it's very complex, because obviously now some people are saying everyone should withdraw their money from the banks. Well, I mean, if that was to happen all of a sudden, it would probably be catastrophic, you know, because if the whole financial system collapses, it's going to lead to mass starvation and so on, you know. So we need to sort of think a little bit more in a more sophisticated terms about what would be the transition that gets us from where we are now to something that really would, you know, allow the entire human population and the natural world to flourish. And there, once again, I think that a lot of Buckminster Fuller's ideas are great. We also published through Evolver Editions a second book called Sacred Economics by Charles Eisenstein. In fact, both Charles and I have pieces from our work up on Reality Sandwich right now. But his book is very systemic in terms of putting forth a whole different paradigm for how the way that the instruments and the tools that we use to exchange value could be upgraded to support a healthy planetary community.
Yeah, and they're at realitysandwich.com. Terrific essays there. And Charles Eisenstein has also an essay called Money and the Crisis of Civilization. He talks about, among other things, the gift, how pre-technological societies, pre-state societies, which obviously couldn't issue money, how they exchange things. My guest is Daniel Pinchbeck. He's the co-editor of What Comes After Money and on Transforming Currency and a Community. What you're talking about, this assault on the environment by financial concerns that are driven to maximize profit, even if it means cutting back on protecting the environment and the world's population, including its animals. Couldn't we have, for instance, just a more equitable system where we said, hey, these companies don't have to maximize profit. They ought to just calm down a little, and that capitalism doesn't have to be an ever-expanding economy, which rakes in more of the world's resources and what have you.
Well, I mean, I think yes, we obviously we can say that. I mean, just in the 60s, everybody said, give peace a chance and all you need is love. But unless it's inscribed systemically through codes and laws and ethical principles that everybody, has decided to move into, it'll be subverted. So I think it really, there has to be a deeper shift in how, as I said, the game rules of the whole thing are being constructed. I mean, definitely one movement that I think is crucial, I mean, not just me, obviously, but a lot of people, is a kind of relocalization movement, because along with climate change, we're also looking at resource depletion, including peak oil. And therefore, and I think that's actually one, thing that's leading to this kind of, economic crisis for so many people is actually there's less, we've kind of maximized the use of the planetary resources, and we almost have to go into a more kind of like salvage or scaling back mode, which doesn't, once again, have to be something desperate or horrible. It's almost like maturity. It's like when you're an adolescent, you go out and you stay out all night and you put yourself in great danger. When you become an adult, you recognize your limits. You become you become aware that you're fragile and mortal, and you begin to live in a more responsible way. That's kind of where we're at as a species now. I think.
Well, localism probably sounds better to a lot of people, because one thing that a lot of these libertarians and right-wing conservatives feel is that we're going to wind up in there. I wonder if they're thinking, is this Daniel Pinchbeck advocating a world currency, which is the world government, and where that goes, 666 and all that. On the other hand, I thought, gee, the euro sounded like a pretty good idea, but it hasn't worked out real well in practice. What are we talking about in any practical terms, or is it too early to talk about that?
Well, I mean, the ideas that have emerged from a number of thinkers, there's some great books, and actually we really, in a way, our anthology, What Comes After Money, is kind of a sampler of a lot of different thinking going on right now. So there's Bernard Lyotard, who's also featured in my film, 2012, Time for Change, was a currency trader who wrote a book called The Future of Money. Tom Greco wrote a book called The End of Money and the Future of Civilization. So we have essays by them in our book. And so Lyotard proposes, for instance, you could have a currency that has what's called a demurrage charge. It's a negative interest charge. It's indexed to a basket of real-world goods like foodstuffs, resources and so on that naturally degrade in value over time. So rather than the currency appreciating through interest, it actually depreciates through negative interest. So the longer you hold on to it, the less it's worth. So he proposes that a money like that would actually bring about sharing rather than hoarding, because the thing you would want to do when you had it was really bring it out to your community so that people would remember you and you could do good with it.
Yeah, actually, though, you have the phenomena of these 700 billionaires that control a net worth of over $2 trillion. You would think that they would become such generous people because whenever I hear about problems in New York City with the layoffs that are going on, I always think with Mayor Mike Bloomberg, why does he write a check? You know, the guy just...
Well, I mean, some people have been doing that.
No, right? I know, but most of them...
But there's I think there's a lot of problems there, too. I mean, this whole model, you know, of charity, I think, is actually a big problem.
I agree.
You know, because the idea that you're going to have one individual who's first of all made, you know, this whole idea that you make your money on kind of slightly inequitable, you know, slightly unjust ways, and then once you've amassed it, you choose as the you know, the kind of, you know, benevolent despot, you know, who gets your largesse, is to me a bad system. That actually there shouldn't be such a blockage of the resources to begin with, and there shouldn't even really necessarily be charity. Like, people's actions should be in integrity with their ethical principles from the start. So what you find when you meet a lot of the wealthy people is there's this, like, bizarre disconnect. You know, they have these things they do which are for charitable purposes, and then in their own work, it's kind of like, well, I had to screw that guy. That's just what I had to do, you know?
Well,
So that's not a viable system.
No, I hear you. And, I mean, in some ways, it was just trying to illustrate how much money that Mayor Bloomberg has. But I was thinking... for instance, is this an attempt to sell this to these guys? Because you have somebody like David Koch, who does one of the Koch brothers, who financed, who bought and paid for the Tea Party. On the other hand, he gives hundreds of millions of dollars to prostate cancer research. He's to Lincoln Center for the performing arts and all of that. Yet most of these guys, for some reason, are almost pathological about wanting to keep every penny that they've managed to suck out of the system. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, in a way, it's like we can spend all of our time, and I think that's been a big mistake of the left, frankly, over the last decades, like criticizing and attacking and so on, you know, whereas, you know, my perspective is more that we have a small window of opportunity to actually build these alternatives and to kind of, you know, make people aware, you know, first you have to make people aware that these alternatives exist, then you have to create, you know, ways for them to implement them, you know, like complementary currencies or time dollars or local exchange trading systems, you know, and so on. And so you have to, you know, as the system continues its convulsions towards an inevitable meltdown, we have this opportunity to construct a positive and viable alternative.
Well, I think you really did answer my question, because what I was really asking was, is this something you want to try to sell to the elites, or is this something that we ought to create from the ground up? And
both. I mean, I think a lot of our, you know, our either or thinking to me is very past tense. And in fact, like what I talk about in my book 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, is really trying to, you know, enter a more like non-dualistic understanding. You know, so I personally don't feel there are any enemies. There's only, you know, some ignorance, and you know, everybody is you know, can be enlisted to make a shift. It's just a question of an awakening that has to happen.
You have a kinder view than I do, but I have no objection to approaching things in that manner. I mean, we've had class confrontation mostly, you know, from the top downward for you know, few thousand years, and
the distinction in this situation for any thinking person is the realization that our collective activity as a species is reaching the point where it threatens the continuity of our species life and all species life. You know, so somehow the insatiable greed and the desire to kind of fill the inner abyss, you know, that somebody like Wangari Maathai like wrote very beautifully about, that has to be superseded, you know, by a shift towards, you know, kind of a inner development, you know, rather than everything being about, you know, this material gain. You know, that's where, for me, I believe that the, you know, the work of shamanism, meditation, yoga, you know, this is all pointing towards this next paradigm that we're opening into, where, you know, where what becomes, you know, of value for people is their inner spiritual development, rather than just what they can grab onto.
Well, people, you know, this may not sound like anything you've heard before, but everything you've heard before hasn't worked very well. So it's time for we're in challenging times. We ought to be looking at challenging thought.
We're super lucky to be in these times. I mean, this is our, you know, I think that we have an incredible opportunity to have a evolutionary blossoming of the human being and of human consciousness. And, you know, it just depends how you choose to look at it in a way.
Okay. We're absolutely out of time. We never even got to the rest of the essays that are in What Comes After Money, Essays from Reality Sandwich on Transforming Currency and Community. My guest has been co-editor Daniel Pinchbeck. He's done this with Ken Jordan. You can go to evolvereditions.com and some lots of good stuff that where this all came from on realitysandwich.com. Another, if you're missing all this, go to my website, peterwerbe.com. Daniel, thanks for being on the broadcast.
Thanks for having me. Also, the film 2012 Time for Change on Netflix, if you want to check it out.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Attention! If you're attempting to lose weight, please stay tuned for an important opportunity. In a 6-month clinical study, participants lost an average of 30 pounds without changing their eating habits or routine. Now, Sensa is conducting a market trial in this listening area. If you're trying to lose weight, you are eligible to try Sensa free for 30 days. Call 1-800-714-9593 now to request your free trial. Participation in this free trial does not require any dieting, pills, or change in lifestyle. In fact, we only ask that you continue eating the foods you love. Just use clinically proven Sensa, the same weight loss breakthrough you've seen on Extra, Dateline NBC, and America's Newsroom. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. If you want to lose weight, you are eligible to participate in this market trial. For your 30-day free trial, you must call this number now. 1-800-714-9593. That's 1-800-714-9593. 1-800-714-9593.
Now's the time.
Now's the time to make a difference.
Now's the time to do what's right.
To help a family.
Now's the time to volunteer.
To make a commitment.
To make new friends.
To make dreams come true.
To help a child.
Now's the time to help Habitat for Humanity build hope and change lives with a family in your community or around the world.
Now's the time.
Now, more than ever, help build it.
Visit Habitat.org.
Hi, folks. Peter Epstein, president of Merit Financial, the Gold People. With the changing economy, you probably know how important it is to protect your wealth. But did you know that gold can give you an edge when other investments are down? At Merit Financial, we make it easy to get the right gold at the right price right away. Surveys show we beat other major companies' prices by up to 20%. That's 20% more gold for your money. The Merit Guarantee is simple. We'll beat any advertised price on the products we offer. And we guarantee every piece of gold is individually inspected to assure the highest quality. Call Merit right now and I'll send you our gold investment guide absolutely free. Find out why so many people choose Merit for gold. Call right now for your free gold guide.
Call 1-866-906-6634. Call right now for your free gold investment guide. Call 1-866-906-6634. That's 1-866-906-6634.
How do you get the most satisfaction? For some career-minded people, it's when they work toward a goal and reach it. The same may apply to you when preparing for your career. In fields like electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design, you need knowledge and skills to get started. That's why you should call ITT Technical Institute. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Call 800-741-5123. ITT Tech's program are designed to help.